Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 1, Conquest, by Greg Keyes. Read for you by Alexander Adams. Luke Skywalker stood before the gathered Jedi, his face composed, stronger than Durasteel. The weight and timbre of each word he spoke all confirmed his confidence and control. But Anakin Solo knew it was a lie. Anger and fear filled the chamber like 100 atmospheres of pressure, and beneath that weight, something in Master Skywalker crumpled. It felt like hope breaking. Anakin thought it was the worst thing he had ever felt, and he had felt some very bad things in his 16 years. The perception didn't last long. Nothing was broken, only bent, and whatever it was, straightened, and Master Skywalker was again as strong and confident in the Force as to the eye. Anakin didn't think anyone else had noticed it, but he had. Anakin distanced himself from his heartsickness by concentrating on his uncle's words. "Kip," Master Skywalker was saying, "I understand how you feel." Kip Duran took a step forward, running his hand through dark hair shot with silver. "Master Skywalker, the Jedi you trained and inspired are hunted and killed throughout the galaxy in response to the Yuuzhan Vong bounty placed on our heads, and you understand it the way you might an equation? Your blood doesn't burn to do something about it?" "Of course I want to do something about it," Luke said. "That's why I've called this meeting. But anger is not the answer. Attack is not the answer. We are Jedi. We defend. We support." "Defend who? Support what? The same cowardly beings who now defame us, deride us, and sacrifice us to their new Yuuzhan Vong masters? No one wants our help. They want us dead and forgotten. I say it's time we defend ourselves. Jedi for the Jedi!" Applause smacked around the chamber. Anakin had to admit, Kip made a certain amount of sense. "What would you have us do then, Kip?" Luke asked mildly. "I told you, defend ourselves. Go out and fight evil in whatever guise it takes. Offense against evil is defense. In other words, you would have us all emulate what you and your dozen have been doing," said Luke. "I would have us emulate you, Master Skywalker, when you were battling the Empire." Luke sighed. "I was young then. There was much I did not understand. Aggression is the way of the dark side." "Master Skywalker, sometimes the only defense is an attack. You know this as well as anyone, but you back down from the fight, Master Skywalker. You block and defend and never return the blow. When will you attack, Master Skywalker?" "This is ridiculous!" A female voice exploded half a meter from Anakin's ear. It was his sister, Jaina. "While you've been out there blazing your guns, Kip, Master Skywalker has been working quietly and hard to make sure things don't fall apart."
"Yes, and see how well that's gone," Kip said.
"Duro, for instance. How many Jedi were involved there? 5? 6? And yet not one of you, Master Skywalker included, smelled the rank treachery of the situation until it was too late. Why didn't the Force guide you?" He paused and then smacked a fist into his palm for emphasis. "Because you were acting like nursemaids, not Jedi warriors. I've heard one of you even refuse to use the Force." He looked significantly at Jaina's twin, who sat stone-faced halfway around the hall. "You leave Jason out of this," Jaina snarled.
At least your brother was honest in his refusal to use his power, Kif said. Wrong, but honest. And in the end, when he had to use it, he did. The rest of this group has no excuse for its ambivalence. Bantha fodder, Jason snapped. Master Skywalker hasn't been complacent. None of us has. But the sort of naked aggression you condone is... effective, Kif sneered. Stay here, meditate, and wait. I won't. I know what the fight is and where it is. With that, he turned and started from the chamber.
No, Jaina whispered to Anakin. If Kip leaves, he'll take too many with him.
So, Anakin said, are you so sure he's wrong?
It won't help any of us if the Jedi split. We have to try to help Uncle Luke. Come on.
Jaina and Anakin followed Kip from the chamber. Kip turned as they approached.
Anakin, Jaina, what do you want?
To talk some sense into you, Jaina said.
I have plenty of sense. You two ought to know better. It's not like you to sit while others fight.
I haven't been, Jaina flared. Neither has Anakin or Uncle Luke or...
Spare me.
Jaina, I have the greatest respect for Master Skywalker, but he is wrong. The Yuuzhan Vong have to be stopped. I've got to go, but any time either of you wants to fly with me, find me. Other than that, I sincerely hope Master Skywalker comes around. I just can't wait for it.
May the Force be with you.
They watched him go.
I wish I didn't more than half think he was right, Jaina whispered. I feel like I'm somehow betraying Uncle Luke.
Anakin nodded. Kip is right, about one thing anyway. Whatever else we do, we're going to have to look out for our own.
Jedi for Jedi? Jaina snorted. Uncle Luke knows that. I'm not sure where he sent Mom, Dad, 3PO, and R2, but it's got something to do with setting up a network to protect the Jedi.
Anakin shook his head.
Fine, but that's what Kip meant by only defending. We need to know which Jedi are at risk before they come for us. How can we know that?
The point is, what are you two doing out here rather than in the meeting? Jason Solo asked from the end of the corridor.
We were trying to talk Kip into staying, Anakin told his older brother.
It'd be easier talking a Sirangana into a box.
True, Jaina said, but we had to try. I guess we ought to go back in now.
Don't bother. A few minutes after Kip walked out, Uncle Luke called a recess. Too much angst and confusion.
What were you discussing out here? How to figure out which Jedi are in the most immediate danger, Jaina said.
With the Peace Brigade out there, that's an open question, Jason said. They'll hunt us from the rim to the core if they think it'll appease the Yuuzhan Vong.
The Peace Brigade can't be everywhere at once, said Jaina.
My point is this, Anakin said. It's hard to predict which single Jedi might be next on their list. But if they could get a package deal, wouldn't they jump at it?
The Praxium, Jason said.
Yes, Anakin agreed. The Jedi Academy.
What about the illusion the Jedi have been maintaining around Yavin 4? That's been keeping strangers away, Jaina said.
Not since almost all of the Jedi Knights have left, Anakin said. They've either come to Coruscant to this meeting or gone off to try to help comrades who've disappeared. Last I heard, only the students are left, with Cam and Tian and Master Ikrit. We should talk to Uncle Luke about this right away. It may already be too late.
What Anakin didn't mention to his siblings was how he had awakened in the night, heart thrumming, gripped by a nameless dread. And though he couldn't remember the dream that had torn him from his sleep, one image had remained with him. The blonde hair and green eyes of Tahiri, his best friend. And Tahiri was at the academy. Luke Skywalker sank into a chair in his study and stared out at the night, or what passed for it on Coruscant, the 100 shades of night glow, shimmering lanes of air cars and transports, bright-studded skyhook tethers lancing toward the unseeable stars. How many thousands of years had passed since anyone had seen a star in the night sky of this city world? Something drifted in the Force, an embrace waiting to happen.
Come in, Mara, he said, rising.
Stay there, his wife answered. I'll join you.
She settled into the chair next to him and took his hand.
Tell me what's wrong.
He shrugged and turned his face back to the cityscape.
The Jedi, of course. We're breaking apart. First the galaxy turns against us, then we turn against each other. It's hard to watch it all fall apart.
It's not falling apart, Luke. You have to believe that.
I have to be strong for them. I have to be an example. But today...
Yes, I saw it. You had a moment of weakness.
I've seen...
He broke off.
What?
Mara gently urged.
I don't know. I've seen a future. Several futures. However this ends with the Yuuzhan Vong, it won't be me that ends it, or Kip, or any of the older Jedi. It will be someone new. I'm afraid to even talk about it. Every word spreads, puts ripples in the Force for every person who hears it, changes things. I'm starting to know how Yoda and Ben felt, watching, trying to guide, hoping I'm not wrong.
She kissed his cheek. You worry too much. They sat and watched the skies of Coruscant until someone came to their door.
It's the Solo kids, Luke murmured. They need to talk to me.
He raised his voice.
Come on in.
He stood and brightened the lights. Anakin, Jaina, and Jason entered.
Sorry we left the meeting, Jaina said. I knew what you were doing, and I thank you for trying. But that's not why you came, is it?
No, Jason said. We're worried about the Jedi Academy.
Right, Anakin joined in. It occurred to me that if I were Peace Brigade and wanted to catch a bunch of Jedi all at once...
You'd go to Yavin 4. Good thinking, Luke said. Anakin's face fell visibly.
You already thought of it.
Luke nodded.
So, what do we do? Jason asked.
I requested the New Republic send a ship to evacuate them, but they're dragging their heels. They might continue to for weeks.
We can't wait that long, Jaina said.
No, Luke agreed. I've been trying to find Booster Tarek. I think the best thing for the moment would be to not only evacuate the Academy, but keep the kids on the move, in the errant venture. If we just move them to another planet, we don't really solve the problem.
So they're with Booster? Anakin said.
I can't locate him, unfortunately. I'm still working on it.
Talon Card, Mara said softly.
Perfect, Luke said. You know where to find him?
What do you think? Mara said, smirking.
But what if the Peace Brigade is already at Yavin 4, or on the way? Anakin asked.
It's the best we can do for the moment, Luke told him. Besides, the danger is still hypothetical. The Peace Brigade might not even know about Yavin 4. And even if they did, Cam and Tian are there. They aren't exactly defenseless.
It's not the best-kept secret in the galaxy, Jason said. And with the illusion gone, what could Cam do against a warship?
Let us go.
Out of the question, Luke replied. I need you all here, and with the bounty on our heads, especially your head, Jason, it's too dangerous for you to go off alone. Your parents would never forgive me if I sent you into that with them away.
There's important work to do here. Weren't you just telling Kip that, Jaina, Jason?
Yes, Uncle Luke, Jason said. We were.
Anakin, you haven't said much.
Anakin shrugged.
There isn't much to say, is there?
Luke detected something a bit dangerous in that, but it quickly passed.
We agree that the Academy is one of our most vulnerable spots. Help me find the rest.
Don't think for a second I've thought of everything, because obviously I haven't.
The three of them nodded and left.
Mara took Luke's hand.
I'll contact Card.
Anakin checked over the system's indicators.
How do we look, Fiver?
He asked quietly, looking at the cockpit readout display.
Systems within optimum variance, the R7 unit assured him. Good. Just hang on while I get clearance. Meanwhile, calculate the first jump in the series to get me to the Yavin system.
Getting clearance took a certain amount of finagling, including forging a code that would allow him to fly without a check that might alert anyone who would try to stop him. Because Uncle Luke was wrong this time. Anakin could feel it in his very center. The Jedi trainees were in grave danger, and Talon Card would not get there in time. Anakin knew it had to be him. He had to go. If he didn't, his best friend was doomed to a fate much worse than death.
Cleared for takeoff,
the port control said. Power it up, Fiver, Anakin murmured. We've got someplace to be. When the stars rushed back into existence, Anakin put his X-Wing into a lazy tumble and cut power to everything but sensors and minimal life support. Ordinarily, he wouldn't be so cautious, but given the feeling in his gut, he decided to play it safe. The planet Yavin filled most of his view, its vast orange oceans of gas boiling into fractal elusive patterns. Its familiar face had marked the days and nights of much of his childhood. The Praxium, his Uncle Luke's Jedi Academy, was located on Yavin 4, a moon of the gas giant. In a way, the whole system was like a familiar room to Anakin, the sort he could walk into and immediately know if something was out of place. And something felt very out of place. In the Force, he could feel the Jedi candidates. He could feel Cam Solasar and his wife Tian, and the ancient Jedi Master Ikrit. Not students, but full-fledged Jedi. These were as seen through a cloud, suggesting they were at least trying to maintain the illusion that hid Yavin 4 from the casual eye. But even through that, one presence shone brilliant, made brighter by familiarity and friendship. Yes, that was Tahiri, all right. What felt wrong was a little nearer and much weaker. Not Yuuzhan Vong, for they could not be felt in the Force, but someone who shouldn't be there. Hang on, Fiver, he told his astromech. Get ready to run or fight in a hurry. Affirmative, the display blinked. They tumbled into sensor range, and his computer built a silhouette from the magnified image. That's not so bad, he murmured. One Corellian light transport. Maybe it's one of Card's bunch. He activated his comm system and hailed the stranger. Transport, acknowledge. For a few moments, he got nothing. Then the audio crackled.
Who is this?
My name is Anakin Solo. What are you doing in the Yavin system? Another pause, then words underlined with a bit of anger.
We can see the moon now. We knew it was here all along. Your Jedi sorcery has failed you.
The transport seems hostile, Fiver reported. Hyperspace jump detected. 12 vessels have arrived. Distance, 100,000 kilometers. Sithbit, Anakin muttered, bringing his sensors to bear. They weren't Yuuzhan Vong ships, he saw that immediately. Just a motley collection of E-Wings, transports, and corvettes.
Unidentified vessel, this is the Peace Brigade,
a voice crackled.
Stand down and surrender, and you won't be harmed.
They were too far away to hit him. Soon they wouldn't be. Anakin closed his S-foils, rolled, opened the throttle, raced toward the distant meridian of Yavin 4. Anakin vaulted from the cockpit of the X-Wing into silent near darkness. A twilight line of illumination in the distance was the entrance he had flown through into what had once been a part of an ancient Masasi temple complex. Someone was watching Anakin from the darkness. Who is that? A voice asked.
It's me, Cam. It's Anakin.
Some 10 meters away, Cam Solasar stood, hooking his lightsaber back into his belt.
I thought it felt like you, Cam said. But there's been an unknown ship in orbit for several standard days now. We've been trying to keep them confused.
Peace Brigade, Anakin explained.
And the one ship has friends now, about 10 of them.
He'd been walking toward Cam while he spoke, and suddenly his old teacher swept forward, clasping his arm.
It's good to see you, Anakin.
And you? You're alone? Anakin nodded.
Talon Card is on the way with the flotilla. He's supposed to evacuate you and the students.
Uncle Luke wasn't expecting the Peace Brigade to show up so soon, I guess.
Cam's eyes narrowed. But you were, weren't you? You came here without permission.
I came against orders, actually, Anakin corrected.
They were approaching the turbo lift when the door hissed open and ejected a blonde and orange blur. The blur smacked Anakin at chest height, and he suddenly found surprisingly strong arms wrapped around him in a fierce embrace. Bright green eyes danced centimeters from his own. He felt his face go warm.
"Hi, Tahiri," he said.
She pushed back from him.
"Hi yourself, great hero from the stars, who's too good to keep in touch with his best friend."
"I've been busy. Right, I know all about it."
She stopped.
"What? What are you looking at?"
"I..." Now his face felt like it had been grazed by blaster fire.
"You look different. Older, maybe? I'm 14 now, last week."
"Happy birthday."
"You should have thought of it then, but thanks anyway, dummy."
Anakin found himself suddenly unable to meet her eyes. He dropped his gaze.
"You're, still barefoot, I see.
What did you expect? I hate shoes."
She looked up at Cam suspiciously.
"What's he doing here anyway? I know he didn't come to see me."
"Anakin's come to warn us of trouble. We need to talk to Tian and Ikrit," Cam told her, continuing forward into the turbo lift.
"Now," Anakin added, following him.
"I'll explain on the way," he promised.
"Fine."
She ducked into the lift just as the door was closing. "The Yuuzhan Vong War Master basically put a price on our heads," Anakin said. "On all our heads, all the Jedi. He announced that if what's left of the New Republic will turn over all of its Jedi to him, and Jason especially, he won't take any more planets."
"They want to turn us over to the Yuuzhan Vong? Let them try."
"Don't worry, they will."
The door opened, and they emerged onto the second level. Cam started down the main corridor, and then through a series of passages. They reached the central area, and 20-odd faces turned toward them. Human, Bothan, Twi'lek, Wookiee, more than a dozen species were represented. All were quite young, except one. Tian, Cam's wife, a graceful silver-haired woman with pearl-white eyes. Her eyebrows lifted in surprise and her lips in pleasure.
"Anakin," she said.
"Tian," Cam said gently but urgently, "we need to talk."
"Anakin!"
Sana, a girl of 13 with brown hair and yellow eyes, waved at him. Even younger Valen Horn was waving, though he wasn't shouting.
"He's busy,"
Tahiri told them. But when Anakin went to talk with Cam and Tian, Tahiri came along. "Tahiri," Cam began.
"Oh, no," she said. "You aren't leaving me out of this."
"I wasn't going to," Cam said gently. "I was going to ask you to find Master Ikrit and meet us in the conference room."
"Oh, okay."
She whirled off down the corridor on bare feet. Tahiri was back with Ikrit only moments later. The old Jedi Master padded into the room on all fours, his long floppy ears dragging the ground. His normally bright eyes seemed a little dull to Anakin, and he felt an inexplicable pang.
"Master Ikrit."
"Young Anakin, it is good to see you, though you bring troubling news."
Anakin raced through the details once again for Ikrit and Tian.
"They would take our children?" Tian murmured.
"The Peace Brigade? Absolutely. We'll have to hide them," Anakin said.
"Down the river, the cave beneath the Palace of the Woolamander," Tahiri offered. "Master Ikrit's cave."
Anakin raised his eyebrows.
"That's a good idea. They'd be really hard to find there, especially if the Peace Brigade doesn't start looking right away."
"What do you mean by that?" Cam said, his voice suddenly cautious. "Why would they delay the search?"
"I'll stay behind," Anakin said. "I'll make it look as if we're still in the temple trying to make a stand. They'll waste time shooting their way through while you and Tian get the kids to safety."
"You're leaving out one little detail," Tahiri said. "What about you? What keeps you safe?"
I'll hide the X-Wing. I know a good place. Then I'll play hide-and-seek until Talon Card shows up. Once he's mopped up the Peace Brigade, I'll lead him to you.
Anakin is correct, Ikrit said. It is part of his destiny. And mine.
Master Ikrit, Anakin began.
You will say I am no warrior. That may be true. But it is not lightsabers that will prevail here today. Not weapons. Not all uses of the Force are aggressive.
Anakin pursed his lips, but he couldn't bring himself to contradict the ancient master. Cam gnawed his lip for a moment. Very well, he said at last. I don't like it, but we don't have time for a debate. Tahiri, come along. Help me and Tian get the students on the boats.
Fine, Tahiri said, but I'm staying with Anakin.
No, Anakin said. Her eyes widened in shocked betrayal.
You don't want me with you. After all we... You think I'm a kid, just like they do.
No, Anakin thought. I just don't want to see you killed, too.
Come on, Tahiri, Tian said gently. There's no time to lose.
Fine. That's just fine, she said. And without another glance at Anakin, she darted from the room. Cam placed his hand on Anakin's shoulder.
It's been hard on her without you here.
Anakin nodded.
I'd better get to work.
Be careful, Anakin. You don't have to buy us a lot of time. When you need to go, go. We need you alive.
It will burn you, Anakin.
Ikrit's pleasant, familiar rasp solemnly pronounced. Anakin looked up from his work on the intercom. He and the old Jedi were in what had once been the command center when the Great Temple had been a rebel base. Most of the wartime equipment was gone, but some remained. The various communications systems, including the intercom that piped information throughout the temple and its surrounds.
Master? Your anger. You have built yourself a vessel to contain it. But the crucible itself will one day melt from the heat. Then you will burn, and others with you.
Anakin slipped a modified data chip in place and straightened.
With all due respect, Master Ikrit, we don't have time for this discussion. The Peace Brigade will be here any moment.
This is the perfect time for it, Ikrit replied. Perhaps the only time. I am centuries old, Anakin. I was drawn to Yavin 4, and now I know why. To see something new born in you and Tahiri. I must give you whatever small help I am able to give to see that birth arrive.
A chill spidered up Anakin's back. Ikrit's words struck something in his core. Ikrit walked to the window.
They are here, he said.
Anakin bolted over. Peace Brigade ships were settling everywhere.
I'm not ready, Anakin said.
You are ready, Ikrit replied.
I'm not as ready as I would like. 10 minutes more would have been nice. I could have brought the automated defenses of the power generator online.
Tell me what you have done.
Anakin switched on the intercom. Faint sounds of speech and movement bustled around them. It'll sound like a bunch of us are in here.
They will see, also, Ikrit said.
The Great Temple was a ziggurat with three giant steps. The old command center was on the second tier. The ancient structure had five openings that led out to the flat paved surface that was the roof of the lowest tier. Anakin and Ikrit made their way to the one that faced the landing clearing and peeked out. Anakin saw five ships settled in the clearing. Two were already disgorging armed Peace Brigaders.
I hope they go for this, Anakin said.
He lifted a remote comm unit and keyed into the outdoor speakers.
You are trespassing on the grounds of the Jedi Academy, he said. Please leave immediately.
A moment later, the exterior speakers of one of the ships boomed on. You inside the temple, the voice said. This is Lieutenant Kot Murno of the Peace Brigade. We have been empowered to take control of this facility.
On whose authority?
The Alliance of 12.
Never heard of it, Anakin replied.
Whoever they are, they don't have any jurisdiction over this system.
They do now, Murno answered. We are their authority. Surrender and you won't be harmed.
You are cowards and traitors. You want us? Come and get us.
Anakin fired his blaster through the narrow window and ducked as return fire heat-spalled the ancient stone. A blaster bolt seared by over his shoulder lanced down into the Peace Brigade. Anakin jerked his head around.
That shot came from above us.
Yes, Ikrit said. Didn't you know she would come?
Who?
But in a flash, he knew. Tahiri was up there. Tahiri and two other people. All Jedi.
Hot slime,
he swore.
Just what I need.
He turned to Master Ikrit.
There won't be room for all of us in the X-Wing. Meet me in the deep grotto. I'll think of something on the way.
With that, he raced down the corridor, blaster in one hand and lightsaber in the other. He found them in the refectory. Tahiri, Valenhorn, and Sana. They had barricaded the outer door with tables and had two blasters between them, no telling where they had gotten them. When Anakin entered, Tahiri waved the gun at him.
What are you doing?
Anakin exploded.
Helping you, Tahiri said with a grin. How did you... Cam thought we were on Tian's boat. Tian thought we were on his. Simple, with a little planning. This is insane. Fine one you are to talk, Anakin, Tahiri snapped. You're the one who left Coruscant without permission, aren't you? You get to do everything while we just run away and do nothing? I don't think so, best friend. Yeah, well, my plan was to get away in the X-Wing. Now we have too many people for that. What does the brilliant Tahiri propose we do exactly?
Oh, her green eyes went round.
I hadn't thought that far. No, I guess you didn't. We'll have to think as we go. I told Ikrit to meet us in the grotto. Then we'll be stuck underground, Sana said. I didn't have much time to put this together. You mean there's more to your plan than hiding in the grotto? Tahiri asked.
Anakin blew out a deep breath.
Sure. We'll take a Peace Brigade ship.
Tahiri smiled.
There. That wasn't so hard, was it?
They reached the turbo lift just as a clump of Peace Brigaders appeared at the end of the corridor.
Hey, stop!
One of them shouted. Two blaster shots pinged against the doors as they closed.
The turbo lift's going to stop at the second level, Anakin said.
Override it, said Tahiri. I can't, he said, activating his lightsaber with a snap hiss. The door will stay open for a few seconds. If they're out there... The door opened on the muzzles of six blasters. Anakin didn't think. He'd already slapped the down button. Now he leapt into the midst of his enemies, blocking the first two blaster bolts with his weapon. Two came at him with stun batons. He leapt and whirled, disarming one with a cut that took several fingers, and another sheared the baton in half. He felt another blow coming, one he wasn't quite fast enough to avoid. When he turned, he was facing another lightsaber, its blade a vibrant blue. Behind it, gripping it and grinning fiercely, was Tahiri. She just slashed a force pipe in half that had almost impaled him. He didn't let his astonishment faze him. The turbo lift with Sana and Valen was long gone. Find Master Ikrit, he sent after the young candidates. Then he squared his shoulders and faced the Peace Brigaders who were regrouping 2 meters away.
They can't get all of us, a woman in front said.
Of course we can, Anakin said.
All of us?
She smirked. From behind her came the sound of what could only be reinforcements. Anakin hit the woman hard with a telekinetic shove that took all of her companions down, too. Then he whirled and made 4 quick slashes that opened a gaping hole into the turbolift shaft. Go, he told Tahiri. You say you're ready for all this? Jump. Tahiri nodded, and without the slightest hesitation, leapt down the shaft. Anakin followed her, bolts flashing above him. Together, they hurled through darkness.
Anakin reached to Tahiri through the Force, and for an instant met a wall as hard as the stone of the temple. Then she reached back, and they clicked as if they had never been apart. They fell in a sort of acrobatic dance, Anakin using the Force to slow Tahiri's fall, and she slowing his as they spun around a common fulcrum somewhere between them. If either let go, the other would go whirling off, out of control. The two young Jedi touched down, feather-light, on top of the turbo lift. "Wow," Tahiri said. "It's been a long time since we did that." The car of the lift suddenly started again. Desperately, Anakin cut into the power couplings and superconductor casings in the walls. The lift jarred to a stop. Meanwhile, Tahiri sliced into the roof of the car itself, just as one of the outer lift doors blew in. "There's the ground floor, right there," Anakin said. "Come on." He jumped down into the car. With his lightsaber, he cut through the car and the wall beyond, revealing an underground hangar that hadn't been used since the battle against the first Death Star. He activated his wrist comm. "Fiver."
"Affirmative."
Fiverr's response scrolled across the small display. "I need you to fly the X-Wing out of the hangar. Avoid all pursuit. Got that?"
"Affirmative."
"Good luck, Fiverr," Anakin whispered. The pungent, rotten egg scent of sulfur would have led Anakin and Tahiri to their destination if their memories had not. Ikrit, Valin, and Sana sat on the edges of an underground hot spring, just outside of a shaft of light that fell from 100 meters above, where some long-ago force had cut through the soft stone. When they were younger, they had come here with Cam and Tian to drift in the warm water to contemplate the stars above and the person within. It was a place all the students knew, but which was never spoken of to anyone else.
"Good that you have come," Ikrit sighed.
"What will we do now?" Valin asked. He was trying to look brave, but Anakin could feel his fear. "Now, you guys will keep waiting here. It should be safe enough. I'm going to climb up there." Tahiri elbowed Anakin in the side. "I mean," he corrected, "Tahiri and I will climb up there while we have light to see by. Then we'll commandeer one of their ships, one big enough for all of us."
"Remember," Ikrit said, "you two are better than the sum of your parts. Together, that's the important thing. Now go."
They reached the top by nightfall and took shelter in a small cavern just under the lip of the pit. They sat shoulder to shoulder, breathing deeply and working the cramps from their muscles.
"When you left the academy with Mara, why didn't she even bother to say goodbye?" Tahiri said suddenly.
"What brought that up?"
"There hasn't been time to talk about it until now."
"Well, keep your voice down. It's not exactly the brightest thing for us to be making noise." Tahiri punched his shoulder lightly.
"You didn't send me a single message."
Anakin was silent for a moment, and so, miraculously, was Tahiri.
"I did miss you," Anakin finally said.
"No one knows me the way..."
"Right," Tahiri said. "No one knows you like I do, and you don't want anyone to. You want to keep all that stuff in you where no one can touch it. Chewbacca, and the thing at Center Point."
"You're right," Anakin said. "I don't want to talk about that." Tahiri's shoulders began to shake, and Anakin realized she was crying.
"Come on, Tahiri," he said. "What are we, Anakin? A year ago, you were my best friend in the world."
"We're still best friends," he assured her. Almost without thinking, he reached for her hand. For a few seconds, she didn't respond. Then she gripped back, and warmth rushed around him like a whirlwind. She nodded her head over onto his shoulder, still weeping, and silence folded around them again. But this time, it was an easier silence. After a while, her breathing became regular, and Anakin realized she was asleep. By the faint orange light of the gas giant outside, he could make out traces of her features, so familiar and yet somehow different. It was as if, below the girl's face he had always known, something else was pushing up.
It made him want to hang on and run away at the same time. And in a mild epiphany, he realized he had felt that way for some time. As children, they had been best friends. But neither of them was a child anymore. Not exactly.
Anakin woke Tahiri an hour before the orange planet set. The sun was not yet out.
"It's time," he said.
"Good," Tahiri mumbled. She shifted into a crouch.
"Are you ready?" Anakin asked.
"Ready as rockets, hero boy."
Carefully, they climbed from the pit and padded through the jungle. The spicy scent of bruised blue-leaf shrubs suggested a lot of searching had been done in the area, but for the moment it was quiet. Anakin and Tahiri made it to the ship landing clearing without incident.
"I like that one,"
Anakin whispered, pointing at a light transport a little apart from the rest.
"I don't think I'll have trouble flying it, and we can get it down the pit."
"You're the captain, Captain." They found a guard in front of the ship, sitting on the open ramp. He came quickly to his feet when he saw them.
"You're needed around the other side of the temple," Anakin told him, with a slight wave of his hand.
The fellow hesitated an instant, scratching his chin.
"I'm needed elsewhere," he allowed.
"See you later," Anakin said as the man started away, pace quickening as he went.
"What the?"
A young man's face stuck around the corner. He looked as if he had just awakened. Seeing Anakin and Tahiri, the fellow's eyes went wide and he reached for his blaster. He stopped with the snap hiss of Anakin's lightsaber igniting, probably because the glowing purple tip was centimeters from one of his gray eyes.
"Easy," Anakin said.
"Hey," the fellow said.
"I'm always easy. Ask anyone.
Would you mind getting that a little farther from my face?"
"What's your name?"
"Ramus. Ramus Venn."
"You pilot this thing?"
"Sure."
"Any surprises I need to know about before I fly her?"
"Not that I can think of," he said.
"Good. I'll keep you aboard, though. If any occur to you, let me know."
Anakin shut his lightsaber down, made his way to the controls, and looked them over. They weren't that different from those on the Millennium Falcon, his father's ship. Venn cleared his throat.
"I just remembered. Before you engage the repulsor lift, you have to enter a clearance code."
"Really? Or what happens?"
"The cabin will sort of electrify."
"I'm glad you remembered that," Anakin said dryly.
"The code, please?"
Venn recited it, and Anakin entered it.
"Hang on, Tahiri. This might go a little rough until I get the feel of it. And pay attention to Venn. If you feel the slightest twinge from him, dig it out."
Anakin engaged the repulsor lifts, and the ship began to rise.
"Call out to Master Ikrit," Anakin told Tahiri. "Use the Force to let him know we're coming."
Talon Card studied the scene on the wild card's command deck view screen through pale blue eyes.
"Well, Shada," he told the striking woman at his right hand, "it appears that our babysitting chore has become somewhat more interesting than anticipated."
"I would say so," Shada Dukal replied.
"The sensor shroud shows at least 7 ships in orbit around Yavin 4 and another 6 on the surface."
"None of them are Yuuzhan Vong, I take it."
"No, but I'd lay odds that they are Peace Brigade."
"I knew we should have found some way to leave sooner," Card said. "Skywalker was right."
An hour later, they were almost sitting on the nearest of the orbiting ships.
"They're hailing us, sir," Duncan, his communications officer, told him. "And powering up weapons."
"Put them on."
A moment later, a thick-featured human male with thin graying hair appeared on the communication holoscreen.
"Freighter, identify yourself."
He chopped the words out.
"My name, sir, is Talon Card.
Perhaps you've heard of me." The man's eyes pinched warily.
"Yes, I've heard of you, Captain Card. It's rude to sneak up on someone like that. And dangerous."
"And it's rude to be given a name and not offer one," Card returned.
A look of annoyance crossed the fellow's face.
Don't try me, Captain Card. You may call me Captain Imsapan. What do you want?
Card favored the man with a wan smile. I was going to ask you the same question.
I don't follow you,
Imsapan said.
You seem to be having some sort of trouble. I'm offering my assistance.
We need no assistance, I assure you. And to be blunt, Captain Card, I don't believe you. I remember you as a smuggler, a pirate, and a traitor to the Empire.
Then perhaps you remember as well what became of those who treated me with disrespect, Card said icily. But if we are being blunt, I am undoubtedly here for the same reason you are, to collect the bounty on the young Jedi below.
This is none of your business,
the man said. Profit is always my business. Consider my offer of help. I ask little in return, and I could be a nuisance if you spurn my kindness.
That sounds like a threat.
Card spread his hands. Take it however you please. Shall we discuss this further or not?
You say you ask for little. What exactly would that be?
Card stroked his mustache thoughtfully. The Yuuzhan Vong have promised a truce if the Jedi are delivered to them. I would like to bargain for passage through Yuuzhan Vong's space once the borders are established. Imsatad nodded, and a brief look of disgust wrinkled his features.
What exactly can you offer me?
Better sensors than you have, for one thing. Detailed knowledge of Yavin 4, certain special defenses against Jedi, and the means of finding them. Imsatad chewed his lip for a moment.
I need to consult with my officers on this.
Take a few moments, Card said, lifting a finger. But do not bore me. Card cut the transmission.
Hut slime! Ramus Venn snapped as the transport scraped along the wall of the pit. Watch my ship! The fit was tighter than Anakin had thought it would be. Still, a moment later, they settled into the steaming water of the underground pool. Anakin dropped the landing ramp, and an instant later, Ikrit and the two Jedi children were on board. Strap in, everyone. Anakin hit the lifts, and back up they started. Anakin, Tahiri said, I think we may have trouble. She pointed up through the cockpit. Something dark was eclipsing the light.
Sith spawn. They've moved one of the big freighters over the hole. Continue,
Master Ikrit murmured. Anakin felt a powerful surge in the force. Anakin throttled up. Fanging, sparking, and shaking, they shot up toward the belly of their enemy.
Master Ikrit is pushing the freighter up,
Tahiri said in awe. And indeed, when they emerged, rather than sitting right over the hole, the freighter was 80 meters off the ground. Anakin darted his gaze about. The other ships and people on foot had come in on all sides but one, so he cut toward the hole as a brutal barrage struck them. Anakin took them through the storm, just as two more ships closed in, completing the trap.
Help Master Ikrit, Anakin told the Jedi candidates. Push the freighter up farther.
Master Ikrit is gone, Anakin, Valen said. He jumped out of the hatch.
He what?
There he is, Tahiri shrieked, pointing ahead of them. There Ikrit was indeed, walking toward the blocking ships, a corvette and a light freighter. As he approached them, they were parted as if by two gigantic hands.
I don't believe it, Anakin said.
But he gunned forward, nevertheless, aimed at the gap the Jedi Master had created for them. Blaster bolts and laser beams sizzled and hissed in the air, but every shot that might have hit either Ikrit or the ship bent away, missing by centimeters, and still the small Jedi strolled sedately along.
He can't keep that up, Anakin said. Tahiri, use the Force. Snag him as we go by.
That was when the first bolt slipped through and struck Master Ikrit. Two more shots hit Ikrit in quick succession, and then fire was pounding their ship again. With a sob of anguish, Anakin jetted the ship through the hole. Same moment, with an inarticulate growl, Tahiri leapt from the open hatch, lightsaber glowing, and ran toward the downed master.
No!
Anakin howled.
He caught a glimpse of her, Ikrit's body in her arms, dodging back toward him. Valen, Sana, one of you, he shouted. Get to the laser turret, now! Anakin spun and fired the jets, leaping above the other ships, strafing them as he went. The ships came up with him. He fought for altitude, all the time aware that Tahiri was farther and farther below him. He could still feel her. She was still alive. Master Ikrit was not. Anakin felt the ancient Jedi's life go, felt it pass through him like a sweet wind. I am proud of you, Anakin, it seemed to say. Remember, together you are stronger than the sum of your parts. I love you. Goodbye. Anakin gritted his teeth against another concussion. He couldn't win this. Not here, not now. With a curse that bordered on being a sob, he flipped, slid between two ships that collided an instant later, and punched toward the upper end. Below him, Tahiri's presence dwindled. The turbo laser in the turret began talking as Sana took control of the gyro. Anakin put the ship into a climb, fighting for distance, though every meter he put behind him tore another stitch from his heart. I'll be back, Tahiri, he said. That, I swear, I'll be back. Talon Card was a hostage, but he wasn't supposed to know that. Imsitad probably thought himself clever and subtle for maneuvering Card into joining the search party on the moon's surface, and equally clever to make certain that there were 20 of his own people to Card's 4. Card was quite content to allow him that illusion of shrewdness.
We've already searched here,
Mabar Yef, the leader of the Peace Brigade segment of the team, said in his shrill little voice, waving his hand at a long row of vine-smothered ruins. I'm sure you did, Card replied. But not with Vornskers. They sense the Force, and especially those creatures that use the Force. They are particularly suited for hunting Jedi. Observe. The beasts had pricked up their ears and were panting eagerly. They darted through a crumbling entranceway.
But we looked in there,
Yef repeated. Do you think you could see them if they didn't want to be seen? Or that you would remember them if you did see them?
Can they really do that?
They can really do that.
Captain Imsitad said you have a way around that.
Card smiled thinly. Indeed, a certain creature from the same planet as the Vornskers. It projects a bubble that repels the Force.
That's what your pretty lady has in the covered cage.
Exactly. My sweet Sleena is as delicate as they are. She understands their needs.
Yeah.
Yef spared Sleena another leer.
Can I see it?
Sunlight harms them, she said, and they are easily agitated. After the hunt, I'll show them to you. Card drew his blaster and nodded to Shada on his right. Most everyone else already had theirs out. After you, Card suggested to Yef.
You're beasts,
Yef told him.
You go ahead.
As you wish. The tunnel took them down through ages of stone. Eventually, it debouched into a large cavern. The Vornskers stood snarling and spitting at the darkness.
Where are they? I don't see anything.
Yef swung his lamp around. No, Card said. Neither do I. He raised his blaster and stunned the Peace Brigader. He managed to nail another one before the return fire came, and by then he was already diving for the rocks. Team members Halm and Person, alert for his signal, were already doing the same. Shada, on the other hand, was a gyroscoping blur in the midst of their enemies. Too bad Yef was already stunned, otherwise he would be learning a whole new appreciation for the delicate lady right now. By his count, it was now 4-15. He heard Halm cry out and regretfully amended his own forces to 3. A bolt singed across Card's arm and he stumbled on the uneven floor. I'm getting too old for this, he thought, rolling on his back. And suddenly, a glowing wand of energy appeared above him, cutting complex hieroglyphs in the air. The blaster bolts that had meant to end the glorious career of Talon Card whined off into the cavern.
Card blinked up at the man standing over him. Nice to see you, Solasar. What took you so long? Then, Card opened up on the Peace Brigaders, climbing to his feet as he did so. Solasar was his cover now, deflecting the fire directed at them with that eerie Jedi certainty. Another lightsaber flashed into existence across the room. That would be Tian. When the Peace Brigaders were down to three, they fled back up the passageway. You're lucky I didn't cut you down, Solasar said. Bringing those men down here where the children are? Using your Vornskers against us? What if they had attacked the students? Card cocked his head. My pets are very well trained. They attack only on my order. Look, Solasar, I had to find you. I couldn't do it without the interference of those fools, and when I did find you, I had to get rid of them. They thought I had an Isalamiri with me, that your Jedi powers would be blocked. But you didn't bring one. It's an empty cage. That was quite a risk. I told Luke Skywalker I would take his students off of Yavin 4. If keeping my word requires risk, that's acceptable. Solasar nodded. What now? Now I suggest we get out of here before they send reinforcements. Unfortunately, Captain Imsatad had not underestimated Card as badly as he might have. When they reached the surface, the forest was teeming with Peace Brigaders. Perfect, Cam muttered, ducking a blaster bolt. At least before we were hidden. Card glanced casually at his chrono. Solasar, don't you have any faith in me? I think I would cover my ears if I were you. Tian, children, cover your ears. What? Solasar began, but was drowned out. Card grinned as turbo laser fire set the surrounding jungle ablaze. It was good to have a crew he could trust. He stepped from behind cover and, carefully aiming and picking off the few Peace Brigaders who were still paying attention, trotted toward where the wild card was landing. When the landing ramp came down, Cam Solasar and Tian shepherded the children on board as Card and his crew provided cover fire. Treetops snapped as Anakin wrestled with gravity. Ben's complaints had deteriorated to a steady moan. Valen, strapped in the co-pilot's seat, looked very ill. Xana was still firing the turbo laser. From her, Anakin could sense both frustration and anger. Tahiri had been her friend, too. Was still her friend. Tahiri was alive. The transport cut a smoking swath across the tree line for a kilometer before Anakin saw what passed for a clearing. He dropped in, straining the inertial dampeners well beyond their parameters. Then he dumped a torpedo and reversed direction, traveling back toward the treetops on repulsors, hiding in the canopy. The torpedo went, taking 100 square meters of the forest with it. Come on, you vultures. Anakin muttered. Anakin could make out a Sentinel-class shuttle through the smoke. It seemed to be investigating the clearing below. Yes, they think we've crashed, Anakin said, hunching the engines back on. The shuttle tried to swing around as the transport rose out of the trees, but it was too late. Anakin fired his last proton torpedo, and the Peace Brigade ship became a ball of fire.
Anakin!
Xana shrieked. Instinctively, Anakin threw the ship skyward, but not before multiple impacts ripped through the failing transport. Of the ships that had chased him halfway around the moon, only one, an E-Wing, remained. Xana, you only have to hit it once, Anakin said.
I can't get a bead,
she shouted back. Let me have a shot, Ben demanded. You'd shoot down your own friends? They're not my friends. Anakin felt no deception coming from Ben, and he made his decision. Valen, uncuff him and take him to the gun. Anakin dropped low again, trying to buy a few more seconds.
I'm on it,
Ben reported. The E-Wing saw its opportunity then, darting in and chewing the transport's engine to shreds. It coughed offline, and in that in-between moment, Ben needled red lines across the sky, stitching through the E-Wing. It spun wildly out of control. Then, the transport was falling.
and Anakin hit the repulsors. The sound of tearing metal deafened him. Card was the last to board his ship. "Well, gentle beings," he said as he took his seat on the bridge, "what's the situation?" Hasishi, his Togorian communications officer, shot him a harried look from the sensor station.
"We did some damage to our watchdogs in orbit, and they seem to be retreating. The rest of our fleet should be here in about 2 hours. But Yuuzhan Vong are headed our way. Lots of them. At least 2 warship analogs and a whole lot of smaller ships."
Card cursed inwardly, but tried to keep his face calm. "How long?" he asked.
"No more than an hour, sir."
Card turned to Cam and Tian. "I'm going to have the idiot's array come alongside. I want to get these children we have aboard safe on Coruscant now." "Anakin and the rest are still down there," Solasar snapped. "If you're thinking of leaving them..." Card cut him off with a wave of his hand. "I'm thinking of no such thing. I'm staying until we find the rest," Solasar said.
"I imagined you would. And Tian?"
"The children need one of us."
"Very good. I'll arrange the transfer.
Now, our tactics will have to change. And we need reinforcements. Shada, I want you on the idiot's array. And I want the demise to run with you. Bring back whatever it takes."
"You're crazy if you think I'm leaving you here."
"We'll be fine. You ought to know by now that if there's anything I'm good at, it's surviving. Now go. We have no time to argue about this."
"I'll be back," Shada promised.
Anakin came to with a taste of blood on his tongue. Through the cockpit transparasteel, he could see only crushed vegetation.
"Sana, Valen, are you okay?"
"They're okay," Ramus Fenn said from behind Anakin. Anakin twisted in his seat and found himself confronting the muzzle of a blaster. He looked up at Ven's cool gray eyes.
"You'll put that down," Anakin said, pushing with the force.
"Sure," Ven replied, with only a slight hesitation.
"I'll put it down."
"Great." Anakin unfastened himself from the flight harness and took the blaster.
"Vaping moths," Ven swore. "You Jedi are sorcerers."
"Keep it sealed," Anakin warned him. "Valen, Sana, we have to find cover outside. Ven, I'm right behind you, so don't try anything." On his way out, Anakin picked up the stun cuffs.
"Anakin, is Tahiri going to be all right?"
Sana asked, tears starting in her eyes. "I can hear her in the Force," he said. "Calling me," he added to himself. He could feel her fear, mixed liberally with anger. Anakin turned toward Ven, who sat a few meters away, his arms cuffed around a young Masasi tree. "What will they do to her, Ven? Where were you supposed to take the children you kidnapped?"
"I didn't know our targets were children, and I don't know where we were supposed to take them."
"I can make you tell me," Anakin warned. It occurred to him that neither Jason nor Uncle Luke would approve of that sort of threat. At the moment, Anakin didn't care. Ven fidgeted, but said nothing. Anakin suddenly surged to his feet and stalked toward the Peace Brigader.
"Hold it! Wait a second, Jedi! Don't slag my brain! I don't know much, but I can tell you something I overheard. The Yuuzhan Vong were planning to come to this miserable hole already. The Peace Brigade decided to head them off, capture you guys before they arrived, as a present of sorts."
"Why do you say these Peace Brigade guys, as if you aren't one of them?"
"They hired me to pilot, that's all."
Again, Anakin sensed no deceit. "What will the Peace Brigade do now that they've botched the job?"
"They'll probably take your friend back to the temple, try to bluff it out with their one captive. Then they'll probably cut and run. But I don't know them well enough to say for sure."
"All right, we need to figure out how to get this ship running again." Ramus Ven vented a bitter laugh.
"We have parts from the ships we shot down," Anakin said evenly. "We ought to be able to cobble something together. Besides that, help is on the way, so maybe all we really have to do is hold out for a little while. Valen, Sana, I want you to watch the camp while I go do recon at the other wreck sites. If you hear anything coming from the sky, you both hide and stay hidden. Understand?
Yes, Santa replied.
Valen nodded dutifully. Good. And ignore everything Ven says. Don't touch his restraints. Don't go near him. I'll be back in a few days at most. From his vantage point near the top of a Masasi tree, Anakin watched the distant dots buzzing around the crash site. They'd been there for hours, but in the last few minutes they'd been leaving one by one. He felt a constriction in his belly. If he had one of those flyers, he could get back to the temple and find Tahiri. And do what? Leave Valen and Santa with Ven and a sky full of flitters? Try to drag them all along in another aerial battle and then a rescue? No. He couldn't pin all of their hopes on that. Something beeped and whistled. His hand was already on his lightsaber before he realized the sound was coming from his wrist comm. He was being hailed.
Fiver! Anakin exclaimed.
Pursuit evaded. X-wing badly damaged. Awaiting further instructions.
Fiver, lock on this signal and come straight here. Where are you?
252.6 kilometers from your present position.
Great. How long will it take you to get here?
20 standard hours.
What? Why?
Repulsor lift motivation only. Ship badly damaged.
But you're okay?
Operational.
Good going, Fiver. Get here as soon as you can. We need you.
Affirmative.
Anakin couldn't believe the little droid had really done it, flying the X-Wing alone, a task Fiver wasn't really built for.
Things weren't exactly looking up, Anakin thought, but maybe he could take his eyes off his feet, at least.
Darkness wrapped around Anakin like a cloak and whispered to him like a mother. It promised him a face of Durasteel and a heart of Ferrocrete. It offered him supernovas of power and the unflinching will to use it. Soft laughter began, familiar yet strange. A woman's laughter, throaty and sardonic. It made the hair on his neck prickle up. He turned and saw her. Her hair was gold. One of her eyes was jade and the other obsidian. Her lips were fringed by 100 incisions, and a white scar ran from the top of her forehead to her chin. Armor of a black and gray banded chitinous substance fit close to her body, a very adult, very human body, though the armor was plated and jointed like an insect. Knobs and spurs stuck out from her shoulders and elbows. She smiled at him through those split lips and held up something baton-shaped, which flexed in her grip like a sluggish pupa. Sudden light blazed from one end of it and resolved into a blazing blue blade. Dark side energy crackled around her, calling to him, and he felt a sudden terrible attraction for her, every part of him yearning for her in a way he had never even begun to feel before. She grinned more widely and laughed again. The last of your kind, the woman said, her voice made whispery by what had been done to her mouth. The last of my kind.
And she raised the blade, and Anakin recognized her.
Tahiri,
he shrieked. She paused, as if she might have heard something very far away. Then she came forward, sweeping the weapon down, and Anakin choked on the look in her eye, the mixture of glee and despair, joy and sickness. He awoke, still choking. A strong hand was clamped over his mouth. He squirmed, but the grip on him was sure and strong. He used the force to twist the hand away from his mouth and shove his attacker sprawling, and in the next instant got his feet under him and his lightsaber in hand. In its sudden light, he made out a bearded face, a blaster. He leapt forward.
Wait! Jedi! I'm a friend.
Yeah? Why did you attack me?
Didn't know. Didn't.
He wheezed off, his voice sounding strange, as if he rarely used it.
Name's Coral. I have been a friend to Jedi.
I didn't know who you were.
Coral? My brother and sister knew of Coral. He made them fix his ship at Blaster Point.
Jason. Jaina, the old man said. Coral also saved them from the Shadow Academy.
You were a TIE fighter pilot, stranded here when the Death Star was destroyed. You went off.
And came back. I left as an enemy to your brother and sister. I came back their friend.
What are you doing here?
Saw some ships fly over, fighting. Thought I saw one go down, so I followed to see. And here I am.
Coral gestured at the lightsaber.
Could you put that away, please?
Oh, sure.
Who were you fighting?
Peace Brigade.
Who?
Coral asked. How long since you've had news from the outside, Coral?
I don't know. Supplies dropped off maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, this will take some explaining, then. A lot of explaining.
Will it explain the new ships I've seen? The strange ones?
Anakin felt his chest constrict. What ships?
They look like growths of some kind. Ugly.
Oh, no, Anakin whispered. Hours later, back at camp, Anakin settled down across from Ben. I need to talk to you, Anakin said.
So talk. Hey, who's the old guy?
A hermit of sorts. I'm putting him in charge of you.
What do you mean?
Ben asked suspiciously. Anakin drew a deep breath and plunged into it.
Okay, here's the thing, Ben. I need your help.
Yeah, well, too bad. You've treated me like hot slime. Why shouldn't I return the favor? The Yuuzhan Vong are here.
That got Ben's attention.
The thing is this. I'm going after my friend back at the temple. I'm going now. I want you and Coral to get Sana and Valen off of this moon.
What? Have you got some kind of fever?
You still need some parts to finish the repairs on your ship, but Coral knows where you can get them.
And why should I do this again? I keep missing that part.
Because it's your only chance. You think the Yuuzhan Vong are going to hail you as an ally when they find you?
I doubt it very much.
You say you were only in the Peace Brigade for the money. You say you don't really share their cause. Let's say I'm going to take you on your word about that. Get these kids to safety. How do you know I won't just fly straight to the Vong and turn Valen and Sana over to them?
Because Coral will blast a very large hole in you if you try it.
Anakin raised his voice.
Coral, could you come here, please?
The old pilot shuffled over and treated Ben to a thorough once-over, then looked squarely at Anakin.
You sure about this, then?
He asked. I've got to do it, Anakin said. The Force is pulling me to do it.
The Force? Huh. Will the Force get you halfway around the moon in less than a year? Because that's how long it'll take you to walk. You might as well wait until we have the ship fixed.
I don't have to walk, Anakin said. The repulsor lift system in the E-Wing was salvageable. I cobbled together something that will pass for a speeder.
Already?
Yeah, but until you came along, I couldn't really talk myself into going. I couldn't take Valen and Sana, and I couldn't leave them behind.
But now I have two signs, he finished to himself. Coral and my dream.
Tahiri, grown, wearing Yuuzhan Vong armor and wielding dark side force. I'll leave in the morning.
Vorsk Felya, chief of state of the New Republic, offered an apologetic expression that looked as false to Luke as it was well practiced.
I'm sorry, he demurred. I can be of no help in this matter, Master Skywalker.
I beg you to reconsider, Chief Felya. Lives are at stake.
The Bothan nodded.
I am painfully aware of that, Master Skywalker. However, whereas you are concerned with the lives of a few Jedi, I must consider a great many more. I must consider further that this action would quite effectively end the truce with the Yuuzhan Vong and cost even more lives in renewed warfare.
Chief, these are children we're talking about. They've done nothing, and they don't deserve to suffer for the mistakes of others.
But you would ask me to jeopardize millions, perhaps billions, for those same mistakes? Your mistakes? That's the most... Jaina Solo exploded. Quiet, Jaina, Luke said. But he's twisting... Child, you have all your mother's fire and none of her common sense. Listen to your master. You've taken up enough of my time. Luke felt Felia's mind snap down and vacuum seal. The interview was over. It makes a certain amount of sense from his perspective, Jason said. Luke and Jaina had returned to the Jedi Master's quarters, and Luke had just finished relating the substance of their talk with the Chief of State to Shada Dukal, Tian, Mara, and Jason.
I do not believe you said that, Jaina snapped. This is Anakin we're talking about. It's the Praxium. Talon Card is out there right now, fighting a holding action for help that will never come. He'll stay there until they pick all of his ships off, one by one. Won't he, Shada?
Yes. Luke fixed Jaina with his gaze. I understand your concern, but what good will one more X-Wing do, Card or Anakin? Uncle Luke is right, Jason said. I don't think the weight we could add to the battle would help.
What then? Shada asked. Card can't do it alone.
What if we added a Star Destroyer to the equation? Luke said. Shada looked thoughtful for a moment, then nodded slightly.
If the Yuuzhan Vong don't get more reinforcements, maybe.
Tarek, Mara said. Tarek, Luke agreed.
I thought you said you couldn't find him, Jason asked.
No, but I have some ideas now about where to look. All I need is someone to look for him.
Jaina's nostrils flared. Uncle Luke, you aren't just trying to get us out of the way, are you?
Luke shook his head. How do you plot that course? No. Let me add to that the fact that since Valen is Booster Terek's grandson, Booster will be more than happy to help.
And Corran Horn is Valen's father, and last I heard, he was with Booster, added Mara.
When you go to find Terek, I want you to take the candidates with you.
What, in an X-Wing? Jaina asked.
We have Shada's ships, Jason began.
Oh, no, Shada said. They aren't my ships, they're Card's, and he needs them. I'm returning to the Yavin system, and I'm doing it very soon, no matter what you work out here.
Take the Jade Shadow, Mara said. It may be a little cramped with all of the kids, but she'll do the job.
Anakin sped over what might have been the billows and curls of a vast sea of green clouds. But the green clouds were an illusion, a potentially deadly one. They were really treetops, and if he passed through one at this speed, he would shatter the makeshift speeder against them. It was exhilarating to be flying again, so much so that he kept reaching for the throttle to really open her up. But the throttle was already open. The speeder, quite simply, wasn't. He tinkered with it as much as he could, but no amount of jury-rigging could transform a cannibalized E-wing repulsor lift welded to an awkward strutwork chassis into a fleet steed of the winds. Anakin flew day and night, sleeping only in tiny naps, drawing on the Force to replenish himself. He was slipping into the arms of fatigue when he heard an odd noise. Pacing him, perhaps 50 meters away, was something large and dark. Something that did not exist in the Force at all. It wasn't as big as a coral skipper, but not much smaller either. Did they think he hadn't seen them yet? Or were they still trying to figure out what he was? He got his answer a few moments later when the craft subtly changed course and their flight paths began to converge. This is no good, Anakin muttered. He turned the lift control down 2/3 and dropped through a small gap in the treetops, stabilizing in the mid-level canopy of the Force. Something crashed through the treetops behind him, and all of the hairs on his neck stood up. What was he facing? A living ship? A beast? He dropped and cut a sharp turn, slipping between two trees. He thought he was evading it pretty well until something hissed past his ear. Not a branch, not anything he could feel in the Force. Desperately, he increased his evasive tactics, spinning and rolling, slipping through the narrowest spaces. Dark things licked past him, hissing in the leaves. And then, something caught the speeder in a grip that stopped it dead in the air. Anakin didn't stop, however. With all of the forward momentum that had just been stolen from his craft, he was hurled into the night, a rocket of blood and bone. He tucked and spun, slowing himself with the force, and dropped onto a branch bigger around than he was. He turned and found himself facing a hole in the night. A thin tendril whipped out from the thing and wrapped around his waist, cinching painfully tight. Anakin snapped on his lightsaber and cut. Incredibly, the strand resisted the first cut. It seemed no thicker than his thumb, though it yielded to the second. Another of the thin strands caught him. He managed to cut it, too. If this kept up, he thought. He saw pretty clearly what he had to do. He hurled himself up and came down on top of the craft. For a brief moment, he felt an odd disorientation, as his inner ear suddenly told him that down was in two different directions, as if he stood on the dividing line between two different gravities. In a flash, he knew what that must mean. Whatever this thing was, it was, like other Yuuzhan Vong craft, propelled by a Dove and Basil, the creatures that somehow generated gravitic anomalies. The craft jerked and spun over. Anakin lost his grip, but he had a fix on the gravity source now. The Yuuzhan Vong and their creatures might not exist in the Force, but gravity did. As he fell, he hurled his lightsaber up, guiding it with the Force. It struck at the heart of the gravitic anomaly, and sparks showered the canopy below. As Anakin fell through the first layer of leaves, he saw his lightsaber rupture into a bright purple flare. Concentrating on the weapon, Anakin glanced off a branch, falling like a rag doll. Trying to focus through the pain, he found the forest floor, pushed against it, until it pushed him back. All of his breath coughed out in a rush, and he folded around his gut, sucking for wind that would not come. The morning sun found Anakin turning blue and black over much of his body, but still functional. He cautiously climbed from his hiding place in the hollow of a tree and looked around. The Yuuzhan Vong craft was down, perhaps 80 meters away. It looked as if it were grown from the same stuff as the coral skippers. The pilot inside looked quite dead. Anakin's lightsaber lay nearby. When he picked it up and tried to activate it, his fears were confirmed. Nothing happened. "Perfect," he murmured aloud. "No weapons at all. Perfect." He found the remains of his speeder, still attached to the cable sneaking from the Yuuzhan Vong craft. It didn't take much of an inspection to tell him that this time he wouldn't be salvaging anything. From here on out, he was walking. Nen Yim watched the Damutek ships settle amongst the alien trees with a giddiness she tried hard to conceal. No reward could come from a display of emotion. A shaper was circumspect. A shaper was analytical. A shaper did not stare in wonder and joy and wave the tendril of her headdress in abandon. So Nen Yim did none of that. But by the gods, she felt like doing it.
"Your first time on a true world, adept?"
Nen Yim arranged the tentacles of her headdress and bowed when she saw it was her new master, Mejan Quad, who addressed her.
"You may turn your eyes on me, adept."
"Yes, Master Mejan."
Mejan Quad was a female nearing the final edge of youth. Her broad, high-cheekboned face bore the ritual forehead scars of her domain, and her right hand was an eight-fingered master's hand.
"And answer my question," she went on.
"Yes, master. I have never before known a world outside of our world ships."
"And what are your impressions?"
Nen Yim looked back down at the dirt beneath her feet.
"It feels so strange, the unimaginable wealth I'm standing on. And the life, different from our own, and varied, and none of it made to serve us."
The Master Shaper narrowed her eyes.
"It is made to serve us,"
she said quietly.
It is the will of the gods that life serve us. You were taught this.
Of course, Master,
Nenyim said.
I only meant we have not shaped it yet, but we shall.
Yes, we shall,
Meijian Quad agreed.
And I emphasize we. Do you know why you are an adept, Nenyim? Do you know why you are here?
No, Master.
Because I saw your work on the Endocrine Cloister in the world ship Banu Kor. Many would have stopped short at the molding of tea, but you went beyond that. You applied the Vul'Ag protocol, though such has never been used in an Endocrine Cloister. I need adepts who are resourceful, who can use the sacred unchanging knowledge in new ways. Do you understand?
I believe so, Master,
Nenyim answered cautiously. A small lump of fear formed in her throat. Did the Master know? But she couldn't. If she knew that Nenyim had dabbled in heresy, she would never have promoted her. Unless she herself...
Come, Adept, the Master said. It is time to receive your hand.
So soon?
Nenyim asked.
Our work begins tomorrow. We have one of the Jedi, you know. Supreme Overlord Shimra himself is watching what we do here most carefully. We will not disappoint him.
Nenyim stepped from the ceremonial bath into a darkened Ujith. At her touch, it wrapped itself firmly about her, and she felt the tingle as it inserted cilia into her pores. Then she allowed the attendant to escort her into the darkened grotto where the Master waited. Both her eagerness and her trepidation had her pulse hammering as she knelt at the mouth of the grotto, a hole the size of a fist surrounded by a massive bulge of muscle. Without pausing or flinching, she placed her hand through the opening. Teeth slid out of their sheaths, 8 of them, and pricked into her wrist. Sweat started on her brow as she surrendered to the pain, as the teeth, with glacial slowness, sank through tissue, grated into bone, until, finally, the teeth met in the center of her wrist. She felt them click together. She tried to take a long, calming breath to prepare for what was to come next. The mouth suddenly rotated 90 degrees, and then the hand came off with a wet snick. Nenyim held up the stump of her wrist and stared at it in dull astonishment. She barely noticed the attendant taking her by the shoulders, guiding her toward the dark basin in the center of the grotto.
I can do it,
she whispered. She knelt by the basin, her head spinning. Dark things moved in the waters, 5-legged things that came to the scent of her blood eagerly. She pushed her gushing stump into the water. She couldn't see the creatures grappling with her wrist. For a horrible moment, she didn't want to. A great flash of light exploded in her head, and for a time, she knew nothing. She awoke, and tears of shame started. Through them, she saw the Master standing over her.
No one has ever endured it without a brief lapse the first time, she said. There is no shame on this occasion. If you ever receive your Master's hand, it will be different, but you will be ready.
Hand. Nenyim raised it before her. It was still seating itself, a thick greenish secretion marking the line between it and her wrist. It had 4 narrow fingers and a thumb protruding from the thin but flexible carapace that now served as the top of her hand. Thousands of small sensor knobs covered the fingers and palm. The 2 fingers farthest from her thumb ended in small pincers. The finger nearest the thumb had a thin, sharp, retractable claw.
Rejoice, Nenyim. You are now truly an adept. You will join me in shaping the Jedi and will bring glory to our domain and the Yuuzhan Vong.
Anakin's hand went to his useless lightsaber, and then fell away. For 3 days, he had been avoiding the Yuuzhan Vong speeder analogs. He tried to take another step, and found he couldn't. With a sigh, he sank down onto the moss. Just a little rest, and then a shadow fell across him. He looked up to find 2 Yuuzhan Vong warriors looking down at him. A third warrior appeared from the forest behind the first 2. He looked different somehow, mutilated like every other Yuuzhan Vong Anakin had seen, but he was more strikingly grotesque. Unlike the other 2, this one was empty-handed. The first 2 warriors grunted and spat words at the third. Anakin had heard the tone before, when the Yuuzhan Vong spoke of things that they considered abominations. It was a tone of pure contempt. For a moment, the newcomer seemed to cringe beneath this abuse, but then he slashed one of the warriors in the neck with the edge of his gloved hand. The other warrior gave a hoarse cry of outrage, lowered his amphistaff, and thrust at the attacker. The unarmed warrior caught the shaft, leapt high in the air, kicking with both feet and striking the staff wielder in the face. The first warrior down was coming back up, clutching his throat. The unarmed one grabbed him by the hair and drove stiffened fingers deep into his eyes, lifting him from the ground by the sockets. The warrior went rigid, and when the newcomer let him drop, he fell to the forest floor, twitching. The warrior who had been kicked in the face didn't get up. Anakin suspected his neck was broken. The unarmed Yuuzhan Vong was the only one still standing. He squatted next to Anakin and peered at him with eyes like algae-infested pools of water. He looked sick. The Yuuzhan Vong showed their rank by scarification and the sacrifice of body parts, but this one looked like an example of that gone horribly wrong. His face and neck were covered with scabs and open wounds. His scars looked swollen and unhealthy. Spiky growths that looked like dead or dying implants moldered on his shoulders and elbows. He stank of putrefaction. After observing Anakin for a long moment, the Yuuzhan Vong rose, approached one of the bodies, and dug into its ear. He pulled out what looked like a worm of some sort and fed it into his own ear, or rather, the festering hole that might once have been an ear. He shuddered, and his body spasmed as if in great pain. A thin drool of blood leaked from the orifice. He turned back to Anakin and held out his hand.
I am Vuarapung, Jedi. You will come with me. I will help you.
The young Jedi fell, her body gripped with convulsions. A strangled cry filled the vivarium.
Interesting,
Meijian Quad said, watching the reaction.
Do you see, Adeptium, that...
I fail to see what interests you, Master Meijian Quad, a voice said from behind.
Nenyim turned and immediately supplicated. Another master had just entered the vivarium, one so incredibly ancient, the signs of his domain were entirely obscured. Both hands were those of a master. Both of his eyes had been replaced by yellow maits.
Master Yal Fath,
Meijian Quad said.
How good to see you, ancient.
Answer me, Meijian Quad. What so interests you about this creature's agony? She is an infidel and cannot embrace the pain. There is nothing interesting in it.
It is interesting because the provoker spine ray causing her pain has been designed to do so selectively,
Meijian Quad replied.
What we have just seen is a reflex unknown in Yuuzhan Vong. We may now confidently map a part of the human nervous system that has no counterpart in our own.
And this is of what use? Yal Fath asked.
We cannot shape what we do not know,
Meijian Quad answered.
This species is new to us.
It strains the protocol, the older master said. What can be discovered that is not codified already?
But, Master,
Nen Yim said, supplicating as she did so.
Surely, in a new species...
She broke off when the master flicked the gaze of its maits toward her.
Are all of your adepts so insolent?
He asked dryly.
I should hope not,
Meijian Quad said stiffly. Yal Fath turned back to Nen Yim.
Adept, if knowledge is not to be found in the archives and sacred memories, what then does a shaper do?
Fear glittered in Nen Yim's nerves.
We petitioned the Supreme Overlord, Master, that he might ask of the gods.
Correct, Adept. I suspect this is not your fault. It is your own master who uses the Provoker Spine Ray so. You are susceptible to her influences.
Meijian Quad smiled gently.
The Protocol of Tsong specifies the use of the Provoker in just such a manner.
I am aware of that. But you strain the intent of that protocol. Who knows what I might have observed had I arrived a little later?
Are you accusing me of something, Master?
Meijian Quad asked mildly.
If not, one might believe you are merely jealous, because Lord Shimra chose Domain Quad for the honor of this shaping.
I accuse you of nothing, nor am I jealous. But dangerous heresies have surfaced in recent years, most often among the Domain Quad. Rest assured, Meijian Quad, I watch.
Anakin and the Yuuzhan Vong sat in a damp cave behind a waterfall. The Yuuzhan Vong had evidently been hiding in the cave, for various of his possessions were already in it. You saved my life, Anakin said reluctantly.
Life is nothing,
Vua Rapung said. Yeah? Then why take the trouble? Vua Rapung's black eyes glimmered murkily.
You, Jedi, you fight your way toward the Shaper compound. Why?
Your people have a friend of mine. I'm going to get her back.
Ah, the female Jedi. You wish to save her life. What a pitiful goal.
Yeah? Well, I didn't ask for your help. You offered it. So explain or kill me. I haven't got time to waste.
Revenge,
Vua Rapung said, his voice low, his eyes slitted.
You need know only this. Your foes are my foes. We will kill together, embrace death together, if such is Yun Yuzhan's wish.
You'll help me rescue Tahiri, Anakin said dubiously.
It's a stupid goal, but finding her will serve my purpose as well.
Anakin searched that black gaze, trying to understand. There was nothing there. Without the Force, how could he hope to comprehend such an alien creature? You say we're going to fight together. Can you tell me how?
The Shapers have planted 5 Domuteks on this moon. That is where your Jedi companion is held.
Anakin let pass the precise definition of Domutech for the moment. Why? What will they do to her?
Who can know the mind of a Shaper?
He said softly.
But you can be sure they will shape.
I don't understand. What is a Shaper?
The Shapers are a caste. The caste nearest the great god, Yun Yuzhan, who shaped the universe from his body. It is they who know the ways of life, who bend it to our needs.
There was a Jedi named Miko Reglia. Your people tried to break his will with a Yamask. They tried to do the same to another Jedi named Worth Skidder. Is that what you think they'll do to Tahiri?
They will not try to break your Jedi. They will remake her.
A chill seeped into Anakin's veins, and he remembered his vision of an older Tahiri. He knew what they would make of her, and they would succeed if Anakin failed.
We should go,
Vua Rapung said. Anakin stood at the crest of the height, where he could see the familiar meander of the Yun River. He'd seen this spot from the air maybe 50 times, and knew it as well as he knew any place. Except that things had changed. The great temple, which had stood for untold thousands of years, watching the passage of the people who built it,
of Jedi, dark and brilliant, the destruction of the Death Star, was gone without a trace. In its place, near the river, were five spacious compounds formed like many rayed stars. The inner courtyards were open to the sky. Two seemed to be filled with water, another with a pale yellow fluid. Another had structures in its central space. The fifth was full of coral skippers and larger space-going ships.
Vua Rapung, what is this revenge you seek? What has been done to you that would make you turn against your own people?
Rapung's eyes hardened.
Do you really not know? Can you really not see? Look at me.
I see your scars fester. You have implants that seem dead or dying. But I don't have the faintest idea what that means.
It does not concern you, Rapung said. Do not presume, infidel.
Fine. Then tell me this plan of yours, the one that will get me to Tahiri.
Follow and see,
Rapung answered. They crouched in a tangle of roots at the water's edge on a tributary of the great river.
We're farther away from the Shaper base than we were yesterday, Anakin complained.
Yes, but in the right place now, Rapung said.
Right place for what?
Wait. See.
So Anakin waited, quietly, and found himself gradually mesmerized by the quiet flow of the stream. Something stirred the life of the forest as they smelled and heard something unfamiliar approaching on the river.
Are you expecting someone? Anakin asked.
Yes.
Soon, something appeared on the river coming upstream. At first, Anakin thought it was a boat, but reminded himself that if it was a Yuuzhan Vong boat, it was something organic as well. Studying it, he picked out the details that proved him right. Sitting on top of it was a male Anakin could not feel in the Force, but the closer he came, the less he looked like a Yuuzhan Vong. At first, Anakin didn't understand why he got that impression. Then it struck him. The male had no scars or tattoos that Anakin could detect.
Stay hidden,
Rapung said, and stood.
Kao, he called.
Through the concealing roots, Anakin saw the other man's head snap around in surprise. He uttered a string of words Anakin didn't understand, and Vua Rapung replied in kind. The floater began turning in their direction, and Anakin dug himself lower. The two Yuuzhan Vong continued their conversation as the floater drew nearer the shore. Anakin suddenly noticed that the two had stopped talking. Just as he was thinking about taking a look, he heard a loud splash.
May come out from cover now, infidel,
Rapung said in basic. Anakin rose warily from his hiding place. Rapung stood on the floater, alone.
Where did he go? Anakin asked.
Rapung gestured toward the water.
You killed him?
A broken neck killed him.
Who was he?
Anakin asked.
A shamed one, a person of no consequence.
Anakin persisted.
What was he doing up here?
Trawling the stream. It was his usual route. It used to be mine.
You're an angler? Anakin said incredulously.
Among other things. Why so many questions?
I'm just trying to understand what happened.
The warrior grunted and held his silence for several minutes. Then, reluctantly, he said,
To find you, I had to disappear. I faked my death out here on the water. I made it appear as if some water beast had eaten me. They gave Keu my route. I will return and tell a story of how I survived, lost on this strange world, until I came across a Van Gogh, pilotless.
Oh, and they'll let us through the security on the river. But why should they believe that story?
They will not care. He was a shamed one. No one will question my story. Now mount the Van Gogh and let us depart.
Nen Yim found her master staring into the waters of the succession pool, the heart, lungs, and liver of the Damyutek. A drop of something plunked into the succession pool just below the master's feet. Another followed, and another. When Mejan Quad finally turned, Nenyim saw it was blood drizzling from her nostrils.
"Greetings, Adept,"
the Master said.
"Master, would you prefer to speak at another time?"
"There will be no better time until my cycle of sacrifice is complete and my Va tumor is removed."
Nenyim glanced around, making certain no one was within hearing.
"It is quite safe here, Adept,"
Mejan Quad assured her.
"Speak freely." "I believe I have finished mapping the Jedi's nervous system and brain structure."
"That is good news. Suppose, just for a moment, that there are no protocols to be followed. In the absence of direction, what would you do, hypothetically?"
"Hypothetically,"
Nenyim said hesitantly,
"I would modify the Provoker spine ray to fit our expectations of her nervous system, to give us very fine control."
"Why?"
Nenyim did not hesitate this time. It was already too late, whichever way it went.
"Despite the assurances of the protocol we followed, what we have now is only an educated guess concerning how her nervous system functions. I suggest that we now test those assertions."
"In other words, you would question the protocols given us by the gods?"
"Yes, Master."
"And you understand this is heresy of the First Order?"
"I do."
"I have searched for an apprentice like you,"
the Master Shaper finally said.
"I have asked the gods to send you to me. Let us go see our young Jedi, shall we?"
Through the transparent walls of her impenetrable cage, the Jedi watched them come in. Only her green eyes moved, following them closely, like one beast seeking the soft throat of another.
"I would advise you not to attack us with your Jedi tricks,"
Mejan Quad told her.
"The Provoker has been told to stimulate you to great agony if we are afflicted in any way."
The Jedi's eyes widened.
"I can understand you," she said.
Then she stopped, looking even more confused.
"I'm not speaking basic. This is..."
"You speak our language now, yes,"
the Master Shaper said.
"If you are to be one of us, you must speak the sacred tongue."
"Be one of you?"
the Jedi sneered.
"Thanks, but I'd much rather be the slime under a hut."
The Master's headdress rearranged itself into an expression of mild anger.
"Right now, you think you are... what is it? Tahiri?"
"My name is Tahiri."
"Yes, Tahiri, a young Jedi candidate. But soon enough, you will remember. After we've stripped away the false memories and undone the disgusting modifications made to your body, you will remember who you are. You are Reina of Domain Quad. You are one of us. You always have been."
"No, I know who my parents were."
"You know the lies you were told, the memories you were given. Fear not. We will bring you back."
Anakin and Rapung stood on a landing of sorts, bounded by slightly uneven coral walls. Every 6 meters or so, the walls were marked by ovoids the size of doorways, obvious because of their darker shade.
"I see," Anakin said. "We're in one of the... what did you call them?"
"Domutex," said Rapung.
"Right. They're shaped like rayed stars," Anakin said. "We're at the end of one of the rays. This is one of the compounds filled with water."
"Each Damutek has a succession pool. The succession pool is filled from below. Its rooting tubes seek water and minerals. The outflow goes to the river. And that is enough talk."
"You're right," Anakin agreed. "Let's find Tahiri and get out of here." Rapung glared at him.
"It isn't so simple. First we must disguise you. An unbound human walking free? Then we must locate your other Jedi."
"I can find her."
I surmised as such, from what I have heard of Jedi. You can sniff each other out at a distance, yes?
Something like that.
Then you will be my hunting, Uspec. But not yet. We must first chart the course.
And your revenge? What about that?
When we find the other Jedi, we will find my revenge.
The coldness in Rapung's voice touched a worry in the back of Anakin's mind. Your revenge is not against Tahiri, is it? He asked. Tell me now if it is. Rapung showed his teeth in grim humor.
If I wanted revenge on your Jedi, I need only to let the Shapers have her. Nothing could be worse than to be in Meijan Quad's fingers.
Meijan Quad?
Don't repeat that name,
Rapung snarled. I apologize, Anakin said. What do we do now?
Rapung nodded curtly. Now we make you a slave.
Anakin had thought he'd been through some hard things before, but nothing had prepared him for the ordeal of letting Vua Rapung implant the coral growth on him. It looked exactly like the sickening ulcerous growths he'd seen on more Yuuzhan Vong slaves than he could count.
It is not real, Vua Rapung told him, but you must respond as if it is real. You must follow certain commands. If it tingles, pretend pain and paralysis. If it actually gives you pain, pretend to die.
Got it. So Anakin let the Yuuzhan Vong warrior prick the thing into his flesh, tried not to wince as it rooted. He concentrated on recognizing the first sign, any sign, that his will was being taken from him. When Rapung was done, he felt violated, as if his own flesh had become a hateful thing, but he still felt in control.
Where can I hide my lightsaber? Anakin asked.
Rapung had made him shed his clothes and gear back in the jungle. The broken weapon was the only possession he retained. Rapung hesitated for a moment.
Here, he said, in the far corner of the succession pool. It will be unnoticed in the organic material on the bottom.
Anakin reluctantly followed Rapung's advice. It was a hard thing to watch the lightsaber he had built with his own hands sink into the water. But at the moment, it could only get him caught. Between the river and the Domutech complexes was a shanty town he had observed from the ridge. Unlike the orderly Domutech compounds, the dwellings here seemed placed almost at random. Most of the Yuuzhan Vong he saw were unscarred or had very few scars. Some had malformed or festering sores like Bua Rapung, and they wore the same sort of loincloth that Rapung and now Anakin had donned. Of course, it wasn't a cloth at all, but something alive. He also had a Tizo worm secreted in his ear, and the speech of those around him reached him in little starts and flurries. But almost no one was talking. They went about their business quietly, rarely making eye contact. He wasn't the only non-Yuuzhan Vong, either, he saw. There were a fair number of human slaves, all with the coral restraining implants. Their expressions he readily recognized. They ranged from utter hopelessness to mere misery.
You!
A voice called from behind. Rapung turned at it, and Anakin shambled around more slowly, trying to keep the expression of the humans he had seen. The Yuuzhan Vong who had addressed them was a warrior, the first Anakin had seen here. The warrior twitched when he saw Rapung's face, and for a brief moment he looked almost as if he were about to bow. Then his eyes turned to obsidian.
It is you. You have returned. I have, Rapung answered. Many thought you had fled your shame. Many were glad not to have to look upon it. The gods know no shame is on me, Rapung answered. Your flesh says otherwise,
the warrior answered.
So it may be, Rapung replied. The slave, why does it accompany you?
I found it wandering aimless, Hul Rapung. I take it to my executor for assignment.
Go, then.
As soon as the warrior was out of earshot, Anakin said, Vua Rapung, you are a shamed one. Rapung looked briefly around, grabbed Anakin's arm, and propelled him into the nearest structure.
You must act like a slave and hold your tongue, Rapung snapped.
If you want me to keep quiet, then make it so I'm not surprised every 10 seconds.
Rapung clenched and unclenched his fists several times.
I must act the part of a shamed one. I am not.
First of all, what is a shamed one? And don't give me that they aren't worth speaking of, fodder.
They aren't,
Rapung began, then stopped. He closed his eyes.
Shamed ones are cursed by the gods. Their bodies reject proper scarring. They do not heal well. The implants of utility and rank that set us apart as castes and individuals are rejected by their feeble bodies. They are useless. I was a great warrior, Rapung said. A commander. None doubted my ability. And then one day, my body betrayed me.
He started pacing suddenly, slamming his palms on the coral, cutting them.
But it was not the gods. I know who did it. I know why. And she shall pay.
The female, whose name you told me not to repeat again.
Yes. She is a shaper. I was a warrior. Our love was forbidden. We both knew it. For a time, neither of us cared. We believed that Yun Tixin and Yun Ka had taken pity on us, dared the wrath of Yun Yuzhan, and given us a special dispensation. Such things have happened before.
His lip curled.
It did not happen with us. We were wrong.
And you broke it off?
Yes. Love is a madness. When my sanity began to return, I knew that I could not violate the will of the gods. I told her so.
And she didn't like that.
Rapung snorted. She blasphemed. She said there were no gods, that belief in them was superstition, that we are free to do whatever we dare, so long as we are strong.
His eyes turned away from Anakin.
She feared I would denounce her, or that one day our forbidden trysting would come to the attention of her superiors. She is ambitious, Meishan Quad. She is spiteful. She made me appear shamed, because she knew no one would credit my words then, that anything I said would be taken as the ravings of a lunatic.
And she's the one you want to kill?
Kill?
Rapung's eyes widened. Then he spat.
I would not give her the honor.
One more question. The warrior we just met, part of your name is the same as his.
As it should be. He is a sibling of my creche.
Your brother? Rapung inclined his head slightly in the affirmative.
We go to the executor now. Play your part. Do not falter. Use your powers to locate to the nearest point where the other Jedi is. I will see you in 7 days or so. Until then, we will not speak another word. Now come.
Together, they walked toward the largest building, unnoticeable among the other slaves and chained ones. Or so Anakin hoped. A spike of pain drove through Anakin's forehead. So unexpected and strange that his legs buckled and he fell to his knees on the black jungle soil, grasping for the wound in his forehead. It felt as if it had been gashed from his hairline to the bridge of his nose. The blood stung his eyes and brimmed his nostrils. But when he brought his hands down, they were clean. Chapped, blistered, and friction-burned from days of pulling tough weeds from the soil, but not bloody.
You, slave!
The Tizo worm chittered in his ear, apparently translating the brutal shout from one of the guards. The coral growth on his neck gave him a faint shock, and he knew he was being given the force of command. He went rigid and fell to the ground, jerking spasmodically. It was easy, given the agony already creeping into his head. When he thought he'd played that role long enough, he climbed to his knees and went back to work, knotting his chapped raw hands around plants and uprooting them. The pain reverberated behind his eyes, fading a bit, and he began to pick out details through the static. Not his forehead, not his blood, not his senses. It was Tahiri who had been cut, scarred like a Yuuzhan Vong. If only his lightsaber was working.
Slave!
An amphistaff lashed lightly across his back. Anakin stood compliant, arms at his side.
Go with this shamed one,
the guard told him. He then turned to the person indicated, a young female with no obvious scars.
Go to the third lambent field. Show him how to harvest.
I will need more than one faltering slave to make my quota, she said.
You feel it is your place to argue with me?
The warrior snapped. She narrowed her eyes but did not reply. Instead, she beckoned Anakin.
Come along, slave.
He followed her, trying to reestablish contact with Tahiri. She was still alive, he could get that much, but more distant than the stars. Almost as if she was fighting contact.
What's your name, slave?
The woman asked. It so shocked Anakin that his step actually faltered.
Well?
My name is Bail Lars, he replied.
My name is Uno.
She pointed ahead to a low coral wall.
They are just past there.
What is a lambent?
Another moment, and you shall hear them.
Here? He asked. But suddenly he did hear a faint, buzzing rattle. And yet this didn't come from the Force. Not exactly. They rounded the wall. Beyond was a field. Spaced perhaps a meter apart, grew plants that resembled a sort of hairy, blood-red bloom. The blooms were roughly the size of his fist, and it was from these that the telepathic murmur seemed to come. What do I do? Anakin asked.
You will follow me. I will stroke the down from the blossoms, like so.
Almost tenderly, she rubbed away the red, hair-like petals until all that remained was a yellowish bulb.
This attunes it. Once that is done, you must harvest it. That is more difficult. Hold still, please.
She withdrew something curved and black from a pouch in her garment.
Place it on your thumb.
He looked at it. It resembled a spur, about 8 centimeters long. It looked very sharp. It was hollow, and when he slipped his thumb into the hollow, he winced as what felt like many small teeth bit into him. Anakin held up his newly spurred thumb and looked at it.
Don't get airs, she said. It's not a real implant. It's not permanent. And in case you're getting any unslave-like ideas...
She took his wrist and jabbed her palm at the sharp tip of the spur. It immediately went flaccid.
Now, take your spur and split the lambent casing at the top. Go ahead.
He knelt by the plant and pressed the sharp tip into the yellow bulb. It split, and a pale, milky substance oozed out. When he had scored 3 sides, he managed to peel the skin away. The entire time he did this, he was acutely aware of the thing's telepathic voice. A quiet peeping, somehow different from its companions, probably because of Unu's attunement of it. The big surprise was the inside. When he had cut it free, Anakin held it up, fascinated. It looked very much like a gem of some sort. What is it? He asked.
Later, when you have a rhythm, and I am certain you are not losing ground, then we will try talking. Not before.
Anakin eventually caught the rhythm of the work, but it was only after he was far behind Unu. The lambents distracted him. They could tickle his mind, and he could touch them, but not through the Force, not in the conventional sense. Unu was doing something to them. They changed as she stroked them, became more distant to Anakin. Was she bonding them to herself? Could Anakin bond with one? Were they what they looked like and felt like? They couldn't be exactly, of course, because they were alive, but still.
Here,
she said a bit gruffly, holding out something in her hand. A wisp of phosphorescence appeared in her palm and quickly sharpened into a substantial light. As it fleshed out, Anakin could see that it was a lambent crystal, like the ones he had been harvesting. You control the brightness with your mind, Anakin guessed. She nodded.
Yes, we use these as portable light sources. They can also be configured with photosensitive biots
to form the controls of various superorganisms, especially of the space-going sort.
She closed her hand on the gem-like organism.
What is that expression on your face?
Anakin realized suddenly that he was grinning from ear to ear.
Nothing, he said. It's just amazing, I suppose.
That night, Anakin crept from the slave quarters. By the light of the orange gas giant, he knelt in the lambent field. Then, hardly daring to breathe, he reached for a swollen blossom and began to stroke exactly as he had seen Unu do hundreds of times. The petals were as soft as silk, rubbing easily from his fingers, and Anakin felt a faint touch, like an electrical shock traveling up his arm. As he stroked, the feeling deepened, and finally, he felt not just his fingers rubbing the flower, but also the blossom being rubbed. He was the lambent for a moment, and not only felt it wakening, but felt himself awakened. Producing his spurred thumb, he cut into the plant and stripped away the husk until he had the gem inside. He gripped it tight in his fingers, and almost without him asking it, it flared into gentle radiance. Yes, he hissed. He willed it dark, then went back across the fields and through the compound houses. He kept going until he reached the edge of the star-shaped compound where he and Rapung had first arrived. He slipped within. The pool shone with a gentle phosphorescence. Anakin felt with the force, hoping desperately his lightsaber was still there, where he had placed it days before. He could sense it in the force, but as if through a cloud. It took longer than it should have, but at last he had it in his mind, wavering like a mirage. But there he exerted his will, and his lightsaber shifted, moved, broke the surface, and came to rest in his hand. Triumph was a supernova inside of Anakin. He had what he needed now. The supernova cooled a little as he left the Damutek and padded back into the village of the Shamed Ones. He needed more than the lambent and the lightsaber. He needed time and solitude. And he couldn't wait for Vua Rapung any longer. He needed to hide somewhere. But where? Puzzling over that, he ran headlong into someone. A Yuuzhan Vong cursed and a strong hand knotted in his hair. Startled, Anakin dropped both his lightsaber and the lambent, which flared into sudden light. In the illumination, a mutilated face stared down at him. Vua Rapung, he gasped. Yes, the other growled. Quiet that lambent. Let go of me, then. The Yuuzhan Vong did so, and Anakin dropped to one knee, retrieving both items. Be still, he thought at the lambent, picturing it dark. The light paled and vanished.
We must act now, Rapung said shortly. Tonight or never.
We can't, Anakin said. There's something I still have to do.
Rapung cocked his head.
You have the weapon?
It doesn't work, but I can fix it with the lambent.
Do so then, and hurry.
Even if I hurry, it could take a day or two.
We cannot hide for 2 days here. And if we go beyond the perimeter, we will never come back in.
Listen, the temple that was here, the one built of stone, how was it destroyed?
What? A Damutek was landed on it. Its substance was dissolved and used to nourish the coral.
But did they fill in the caverns below it?
Caverns?
Yes, Anakin said excitedly. If they just flattened the temple with one of these Damuteks, the caverns underneath might still be there. Didn't you say the Damuteks drive down roots or something for water and minerals?
Rapung swore.
Of course, he said. If there are indeed caverns of size below, and if the gods are with us. But of course they are. I am Vua Rapung.
Adept Nenyim?
Nenyim searched the darkened laboratory grotto for the sound of her name, and found it coming from a young male with the forehead marks of Domain Kell. He lacked a shaper's hands, which placed him below her in rank.
You have my name, initiate,
she said, letting a bit of irritation show.
And my attention. My name is Tsun, he said. I have been assigned by Master Meijian Quad to aid you today in our glorious work.
Nen Yim braided tendrils in skepticism.
The master said nothing of assistance, she noted. She was to meet me here herself. Meijian Quad sent me, adept, to explain that she will meditate today rather than labor. Her Va tumor is to be removed next cycle, and she wishes these last periods to contemplate her pain. I see. Your message is delivered, but how am I to recognize her authority in it? I was once a close companion to a friend of yours, said Tsun. His name was Yakun.
Yakun? She said, as if just remembering that there was such a name.
We shall not speak of him, for he is a heretic.
She kept her tongue and the tentacles of her headdress as still as unliving stone, but she remembered hearing news of Yakun's accusation and sacrifice. She remembered private forbidden moments with him before, and her vain prayers to Yun Tixin and Yun Ka to protect him. Perhaps Sun understood her posture, or her headdress betrayed her, for through the sudden renewal of pain behind her eyes, she saw he knew. And Nen Yim understood.
Meijian Quad must have sent Sun, she thought. This is her message. I am to trust him. Yakun was a heretic. My master is a heretic. So is Sun. Initiate Sun, she said firmly. Let me show you our work.
The Jedi's eyes had lost much of their focus. She no longer glared like a predatory beast. Instead, she stared for long hours at nothing, a look of puzzlement on her face.
She seems stunned,
Tsun noticed. Nen Yim signaled the vivarium to become opaque to sound.
She can hear us. And she knows the tongue of the gods. Even in that state, she might remember anything we say, or nothing.
She is being drugged?
Not precisely. We are altering her memories.
Ah, Tsun said knowingly.
The protocol of Ka.
No, Nen Yim corrected. Not exactly. That protocol was ineffective on her human brain. Nen Yim squatted near the vivarium membrane, opened it again to sound, and spoke to the Jedi.
What is your name?
She asked. The Jedi didn't react. With a sigh, Nen Yim stimulated a minor pain center and cortical nerve with the provoker spine ray. What would have once made the young Jedi shriek in agony only cycles before now merely made her flutter her eyes and frown.
Yes, adept,
the Jedi said, as if waking reluctantly from a dream.
What is your name?
Nen Yim asked.
My name?
Yes.
My name is...
Her teeth clenched and her face went white. Then, as if in sudden remembrance, the Jedi's face cleared.
My name is Reina Quad, she said.
Very good, Reina. Nen Yim said.
I see now, Tsun said. You trellis her thoughts. Unwanted responses bring pain. Desired ones do not.
No, Nen Yim replied. That name came from an implanted memory.
But you just said that the protocol of Ka was ineffective.
Yes, but we can build a kind of Ka cell using her own human brain cells. A look of sheer delight crossed the initiate's face.
So it is true,
he whispered.
Here, you pursue our dream, the super protocol, the methods of finding new knowledge without asking the gods.
Nen Yim felt infected by his joy, but she drew her tentacles into a mild astonishment.
Here, in these chambers of the master, such things may be spoken in security, she cautioned. But outside of this room, have a care.
Yes, of course. I know what happens to heretics as well as you.
The Damutek route was a hollow tube, and when Anakin and Vua Rapung entered it, it was almost a meter in diameter. Close, but not claustrophobic. As soon as it sensed their presence, it constricted, hugging the contours of their bodies with insistent strength. It felt like trying to crawl up the esophagus of a snake intent on swallowing. How long would the Nulleth breather shoved down his windpipe continue to work? Fighting a nattering little panic, Anakin continued dragging himself forward. He thought of sunlight, wind, infinite space. He thought of Tahiri. An image of her prison had assembled itself in his mind. A small chamber divided from a larger one by a thin but unbreakable membrane. Several other cells, like the one she was in, were visible, but these were empty and dark, presumably waiting for more young Jedi captives. He was certain that Tahiri was in a great deal of confusion. Not only did she not respond to his touch, she sometimes didn't even recognize it. Anakin thought he'd been happy just to leave the tube. Pulling himself onto damp stone and yanking the Nulleth from his mouth was infinitely better. He sat there, gasping and wet, as Vua Rapung climbed out of the water behind him.
I hope this was worth it, Rapung growled.
It will be.
Heal your weapon so we can leave this skulking pit.
Disappointment edged at Anakin, but he fought it back. He could feel the lambent, but not in the force, not the way he could feel everything else about his weapon. Everything was in place, fitted, ready to work. But the real moment a lightsaber became a Jedi's weapon was when the first amperes of power trickled through it, when each piece became a part of the other and a part of the Jedi building it. But the lambent was resisting that. And time was passing, each moment bringing Tahiri closer to something terrible. Concentrate, he thought. There is no try. But there was failure, especially here. Master Yoda's words, his entire philosophy, required the presence of the Force in everything. But the Force wasn't in the Yuuzhan Vong. It wasn't in their biotech. They could be fought only indirectly, with things that could be sensed in the Force. Something slapped him then, something that had been cocking its hand back for a long time. Master Yoda was wrong. If the Jedi stood for nothing but seeking balance in the Force, then he had no business fighting the Yuuzhan Vong. Oh, he could rescue Tahiri. After all, preventing her from becoming a dark Jedi was at the core of the philosophy. But were the actions of the Yuuzhan Vong, however bad or evil they seemed, in and of themselves worth opposing if they had no effect on the Force? To be sure, the aliens were killing people, which always disturbed the Force. But did it unbalance it? The Yuuzhan Vong weren't gathering dark energy about themselves. If anyone ran the risk of doing that, it was Jedi like Kip, and maybe even himself. All their efforts were predicated on the certainty that the Force was in everything. And it wasn't. And while the facts of the matter were staring them all in the face, no Jedi had had the guts to confront the new reality. No, it wasn't right for the Yuuzhan Vong to kill whole planets. It wasn't right for them to enslave people. Those actions were evil, and they had to be fought. But if the Force did not draw that line and set great dark side alarms wailing, then maybe Anakin didn't serve the Force. Or to put it more precisely, he served something more fundamental than the Force. Something of which the Force was a manifestation, a tool. Not Rapung's gods or any god, but some fundamental truth built into the universe at a subatomic level. In his galaxy, the Force was the servant of that truth. Wherever the Yuuzhan Vong were from, some other manifestation must prevail. But light remained light, and dark, dark. And whatever happened to the Yuuzhan Vong, they had turned to the dark side long ago. That didn't make them all evil, but it made them worth opposing. Without anger or hatred, they had to be stopped, and Anakin Solo would never turn his eyes from that. With a sudden surge of confidence, he reached for the parts of his lightsaber in the Force, and then pressed deeper. And in a flash of epiphany, he had it. The link between the rest of his lightsaber and the lambent was Anakin Solo. It was in him that changes had to happen. Power surged and crackled, and the cavern echoed with a snap hiss. And somewhere, Bua Rapung snarled. Anakin opened his eyes to the purple glow of his lightsaber. I am Jedi again, he said quietly. Perhaps a new kind of Jedi altogether. Meishan Quad curled her headdress in recognition at Nen Yim as she entered the laboratory.
Detail your progress, adept, the master said.
Her tone was curt, and her tendrils suggested irritation.
We made good progress in your absence, master, Nen Yim said. I think with only minor genetic adjustments, the memory implants will be permanent. She resists them less than she did when last you were here.
Yes, Meishan Quad replied, anger twitching her tendrils. Valuable days missed.
She suddenly tremored and reached her eight-fingered hand to her head.
It is time. I must have the Va tumor removed. Yet another despicable delay.
Nen Yim gave her master a puzzled look.
I thought that's where you've been, having the Va tumor removed.
Meishan Quad's eyes went to slits.
What? Why did you think that?
You were gone for 2 cycles, master.
Indeed. Engaged in meaningless political exercises with Master Yal Fath. I was forced into a ritual seclusion, and at a quite inconvenient time.
But the assistant you sent said nothing of that. He did say you were having your Va tumor removed.
What assistant?
Tsun. He told me you sent him. He knew things about what we do here.
No. Meishan Quad sighed. He guessed that we were engaged in heresy, and you confirmed it. Yal Fath now has his evidence, thanks to you.
No,
Nen Yim protested.
Oh, I'm afraid so, a voice from the doorway boomed.
Nen Yim spun to see Commander Tsak Vota standing in the doorway, an escort of his personal guard just behind him.
I'm afraid I must take both of you captive and search your chambers for evidence.
Evidence of what?
Meishan Quad snapped.
Evidence of heresy, of course,
Tsak Vota replied. Going back up the route was much easier than coming down it. The current was with them. They emerged in the succession pool under orange Yavin light. On the way up, Anakin had noticed an interesting thing. Vua Rapung existed for him now. Not in the Force, not with the clarity that the Force offered, but he was there, cast from the lambent to Anakin's mind. With Rapung, Anakin slipped into the shadows. The Shaper compound was an eight-armed star with the pool in the center. The corridor they entered took them up one of the arms. Anakin tensed as they met their first Yuuzhan Vong. A cluster of them stood together, discussing something he couldn't quite catch. When they saw Rapung and Anakin, they stopped and stared, but didn't say anything. This is easier than I thought it would be, Anakin said after they were past the group. Rapung grunted.
I would have killed them if I thought it would help, but they sent the signal the instant they saw us.
What are you talking about?
A shamed one and a slave in a Shaper compound? Unlikely.
But they didn't...
Scream? Run? Shapers they may be, but they are Yuuzhan Vong. If we came to kill them, they would be dead. They know that.
So what do we expect now? But Rapung didn't have to answer. Ahead of them, the walls, floor, and ceiling of the corridors suddenly met one another. Whoops, Anakin managed. A quick look behind him showed the same thing.
We have seconds, Rapung said. Do not inhale.
Anakin nodded and ignited his lightsaber. The fierce purple light highlighted the mist emerging from the corridor walls. Anakin approached the obstruction and cut into it with broad strokes, carving a hole large enough to step through. Beyond, the corridor continued another 4 meters and ended in another dilation. This section was already full of mist. Anakin cut through that, too, but his lungs were starting to hurt now, and black spots danced before his eyes. So, rather than attacking the inevitable barrier that had closed beyond the second one, he cut through the wall to his right. That spilled the two into a large chamber, where they startled 2 Yuuzhan Vong. Rapung stabbed a finger at the 2 shapers.
One of you, take me to the personal laboratories of Master Meijian Quad.
The shorter of the 2 frowned.
You're a shamed one.
Rapung reached him in 2 strides and struck him high in the chest, lifting the shaper from his feet and slamming him into the wall. He slumped to the floor, blood spilling from his lips.
You,
Rapung said to the other,
lead us to Meijian Quad.
The 2nd shaper looked at his unconscious companion.
Come with me,
he said. The shaper took them through a quick series of turns, and then into a long, straight corridor that ended in one of the membranes that normally served as doors.
Through there is the master's personal chambers,
their captive said.
But the threshold will not open itself to any of us.
That is why I have a Jedi with me, Rapung told him, as Anakin cut through the door.
This is the place, Anakin said. This is where they had her.
His gaze searched wildly about the room. It didn't resemble a laboratory so much as a vivisectorium, each surface covered with internal organs, except some of these pulsed and mewled the way severed body parts didn't. A quarter of the chamber was walled off by a transparent membrane. She was in there, he clarified. Where would they have gone?
I don't see any other way out, Rapung replied.
Well then, but before he could finish, he sensed something at his back. Another section of the wall had just gone transparent and permeable. 12 Yuuzhan Vong warriors poured through it. Behind them, Anakin could make out the yellow of Tahiri's hair.
Tahiri!
He shouted, and threw himself at the wave of enemies. Vua Rapung howled like a crate dragon. Anakin and his companion were soon forced back toward the vivarium by 6 warriors who had engaged them. The other 6, one of whom was vastly more scarred than the rest, probably a leader, led Tahiri and what appeared to be 2 female shapers back out the door Anakin and Rapung had entered through.
No!
Anakin exploded. He tried to leap over the warriors blocking his way, but one snagged his ankle with the Ampa staff and used the momentum of his leap to slam him into the floor. Anakin cushioned the fall with the force, but his enemy was still between him and the door, and his foot was still caught. That is, until Rapung hit the fellow on the back of the head so hard that teeth flew out. Rapung stood over Anakin, and for a moment, they weren't under attack. The warriors merely stood there, watching the shamed one and Anakin warily.
Vua Rapung,
one of them snarled finally.
What are you doing here with this infidel? You should be in the Shaper Village, pursuing your redemption.
I have nothing to be redeemed for, Rapung said. I have been wronged. You all know it.
We know your claims.
You, Tolok Nap, Vua Rapung said. You fought beside me only a few tens of cycles ago. You believe me cursed by the gods?
The warrior he had addressed flared his nostrils, but did not reply. The one who had spoken before, however, lowered his voice.
Whatever you were, whether you are cursed or not, you have clearly gone mad. You fight with an infidel against your own kind.
I seek my vengeance, Rapung said.
Mejan Quad, where is she going?
The Shaper Master has been taken up for her trials. The accusation is heresy.
I cannot let her be taken, not until she admits she has wronged me. Any who stand in the way of that will leave this life on wings of blood.
We will stop you, Tolaknap said. But we will fight you as the warrior you once were.
He threw Rapung his amphistaff.
Take up a weapon. Do not make us kill a bare-handed man.
Rapung turned a glaring eye on Anakin.
Stand away, Jedi.
Rapung, I have no time for games. Tahiri
is with the object of my vengeance. If we lose the one, we lose the other. I will make it swift.
Anakin stared at Rapung, then nodded curtly. He stepped back and switched off his lightsaber. Mere seconds later, stepping over the corpses, Anakin glanced sidewise at Rapung.
What was it you needed me for?
He asked.
I'm forgetting.
They jogged down the corridor, gazes cutting right and left, alert for ambush from side corridors.
When we have Mejan Quad, Rapung said, you must keep death from my back until I have forced her to speak. That is why I need you.
I can do that.
Swear it, by this force you worship. Keep death from my back until she speaks. For no less a time, and no longer.
I swear it, Anakin replied. If we ever get that close, that is. How long before reinforcements arrive?
Not long.
Then we're going about this all wrong. We're just going to run into whatever ambush they have planned. We need a little change in tactics.
Explain.
Anakin raised his lightsaber and sliced a hole in the low ceiling. Do you need a boost up? He asked. Moments later, from the roof of the compound, Anakin and Vua Rapung watched warriors station themselves at the ground-level exits and entrances. Anakin reached out through the Force, searching for Tahiri. She was there, but her presence was still fitful, hard to pinpoint.
Tahiri, hear me. I must find you.
The response was rejection.
Tahiri, you know me. You're my best friend. Please.
This time, he caught a faint hesitation, and then something like a step in his direction. He saw a brief vision of coral skippers and larger Yuuzhan Vong ships.
Sith spawn,
he exclaimed.
They're going to board a ship.
Rapung growled deep in his throat.
No, they are not, he said. This way.
They leapt down to the outside of the compound, between the rays, far from any entrances, and slipped past the most lightly guarded exit, apparently without being noticed. Another 100 meters brought them to the ship compound. When they were yet 20 meters from the ship, a cry went up. Three warriors guarding the ramp dropped to their knees and hurled thud bugs. Time slowed for Anakin as he ignited his blade and brought it up to deflect them. Three snapped against the bright blade and arced off on divergent tangents as embers. None of them struck Anakin, but Rapung grunted as if hit. He didn't slow, however. They rammed the three guards like a thunder front and sprang up the landing ramp into another hail of thud bugs. This time, Anakin was not as fortunate. One of the things caromed off his thigh, and he dropped to one knee, blocking two more that would have opened his chest. Rapung yowled, twisted, and hit the ramp with a thud. Anakin struggled to rise.
Stop, Jedi,
a cold voice said. It was the commander. He stood next to Tahiri, with an amphistaff curled around her neck. His remaining three warriors gathered in front of him.
Tahiri,
Anakin said.
That isn't my name,
Tahiri told him.
I am Reena Quad. You're Tahiri, my best friend, Anakin said. Whatever they've done to you, I know you remember me.
You Jedi,
the commander snapped.
I know who you are. You are Anakin Solo, brother to Jason Solo, he who is so much desired by War Master Tsavong La. I wish to have your surrender. I wish to have you alive.
If I do not get my wish, then the female will die.
I'll go in her place, Anakin said, of my own will, but you have to release her.
How ridiculous, the commander said.
I will do nothing of the kind. Your decision will decide whether she lives or dies, nothing more. She is ours.
Jedi,
Vua Rapun croaked, rising shakily to his feet.
Remember your oath to me.
Anakin saw with dismay that Rapung had one hand stuffed into a gaping hole in his belly. What could he do? The commander would kill Tahiri. He was sure of that, and in his present condition he would never be able to stop it. But if he surrendered, he betrayed Vua Rapung. Anakin put his hand on Rapung's shoulder.
I remember my oath, he said. Which one is she?
The female with the eight-fingered hand.
Anakin looked back up at the commander. All right, this one thing, then. If you want me alive, compel the shaper named Mejan Quad to speak the truth.
About what?
The questions Vua Rapung will put to her.
There is no sense in listening to any demented lies from this one, Mejan Quad said. He fights by the side of a Jedi infidel. What more need be said?
Behind them, the square was gradually filling with warriors and onlookers. A shout came from below.
Do you fear the truth, Mejan Quad? If he is mad, then compelling you to speak will do you no harm.
Anakin looked over his shoulder and saw the warrior who had stopped them the first day. Hal Rapung, Vua's brother. A general murmur of approval went around with that.
How many of you fought with him?
Hal continued.
Whoever questioned the courage of Vua Rapung? Whoever doubted the gods loved him? Having found one treachery in Mejan Quad, the treachery of heresy, I see no reason to doubt she is capable of others.
The commander turned to the Shaper Master.
Master Mejan Quad, I compel you to answer truthfully whatever questions the shamed one once known as Domain Rapung puts to you.
I will not submit to any such indignity,
Mejan Quad replied.
You do not have the right to refuse, and your domain will pay the full price if you attempt to.
Mejan Quad's eyes glittered curiously, and she lifted her chin. She bared her teeth contemptuously at Vua Rapung.
Ask your questions, shamed one.
I have but one, Vua Rapung said. Mejan Quad, did you intentionally give me the appearance of being shamed? Did you do this to me, or did the gods?
Mejan Quad stared at him with an unreadable expression, then lifted her chin even higher.
There are no gods,
she said.
This miserable thing you are is what I made of you.
The crowd erupted in frenzy. Mejan Quad spread her eight fingers as if waving. Faster than the eyes could catch, those fingers elongated, spearing out. Before the commander could even blink, one went through his eye and out the back of his skull. The warriors all around dropped without a sound, similarly murdered. Anakin lurched forward, but a flick of the shaper's wrist and one of the finger spears pierced his forearm and wrapped around it. Torment contracted every muscle in Anakin's body, and his lightsaber went clattering down the landing ramp. Vua Rapung fell from a similar wound in the leg. He flopped next to Anakin, a confused expression on his face. His lips were wet with blood.
Jedi,
he croaked, but his words drowned in a fit of hacking. The crowd, led by Hal Rapung, had started up the ramp. Mejan Quad turned to her assistant.
Nenyim, drag those two on board.
She motioned toward Anakin and the fading Vua Rapung. The younger shaper hesitated, then started toward Anakin. She stopped when she saw Anakin's lightsaber floating up from behind him. Mejan Quad saw it too. Tahiri plucked the blade from the air and ignited it with a snap hiss. Mejan Quad's expression froze with the sudden, fatal understanding that it hadn't been Anakin levitating the weapon at all. Then Tahiri decapitated her. Tahiri stood for a moment, looking at what she had done, and smiled.
Tahiri!
Anakin managed. She let the point of the blade drop so it was almost stroking his cheek.
My friend,
she said, her voice low and weird.
My best friend, you left me.
Her eyes were wrong. They were the same color they had always been, but they had once been warm, full of laughter. Now they were chlorine ice.
I've been trying to find you,
Anakin said.
You aren't real,
Tahiri said.
None of this is. You are a lie.
He held her gaze and saw the bleakness there, the seeds of his vision beginning to take root.
It's not a lie, Tahiri. You are my best friend. I love you.
The blade stroked off a lock of his hair, but he didn't flinch.
I love you,
he repeated. Tahiri closed her eyes, and when she opened them again, they became the green eyes he knew. Or almost.
Anakin, are you really?
She looked around as if noticing the crowd for the first time.
Well,
this doesn't look good, she observed. Anakin saw what she meant. The warriors in the crowd had come to the forefront. Armed to the teeth, they stood watching the strange spectacle only meters away. They wouldn't just watch for long.
We have to get out of here, Anakin said.
And this is your plan? Tahiri asked, in something like her old voice.
Can I have that back?
Anakin asked softly, motioning toward his lightsaber. She looked as if she would say no, but then shrugged and handed it to him.
Sure, it's your blade.
Anakin took the weapon, stood shakily, and faced the gathered warriors. Hulrapung raised his ampostaff to guard.
Jedi, you have proven yourself a great warrior. It will be my honor to kill you.
No, a voice from behind Anakin grated. Impossibly, Vuarapung rose to his feet. He took an ampostaff from one of the dead guards.
No, while I live, none of you shall fight the Jedi.
Vuarapung, his brother said.
We all heard what Mejan Quad said. You are shamed no longer. I was never shamed. But now you know it is a warrior you face.
Vuarapung, no,
Anakin said. Rapung turned to him.
I will die soon. I am able to give you only a small chance. Take it, now.
He turned back to the crowd.
A salute to the Jedi,
he shouted.
A salute of blood.
With that, he leapt at the front rank of warriors, ampostaff spinning. His first blow struck his brother, knocking him unconscious but still alive. The others he attacked with much more lethal precision.
Anakin,
Tahiri said.
Into the ship,
he shouted.
Can you fly it?
Tahiri asked.
We'll worry about that once we figure out how to get the boarding ramp up.
They ducked inside the hatch and started searching frantically for some sort of control.
This is hopeless,
Tahiri said. Anakin ran his hands over the spongy interior of the ship. Tahiri was right. If they couldn't even get the ramp up, what chance did he have of flying the stupid thing? He saw Vuarapung die. Already surrounded by a pile of corpses, his feet were trapped, forcing him to fight without footwork. An ampostaff struck Rapung a downward blow in the neck and came out the small of his back. He dropped his own ampostaff down like a blaster bolt and crushed the skull of the one who had wounded him before collapsing. Then the other warriors were on him, ampostaffs slashing, surging past him up the ramp.
Oh! Tahiri exclaimed. Sidao Ponsi!
The ramp sucked in, out from under the feet of the charging warriors, and the hatch shut.
You have to know how to talk to it, I guess,
Tahiri said. She tried to say it lightly, but it was almost a parody of her old self. She knew it, too. Tears brimmed her eyes.
They put things in my head, Anakin.
I don't know what's real anymore.
He reached for her shoulder. I'm real, and I'm going to get you out of this. Believe me. She folded into him, suddenly, and his arms went around her without him even telling them to. She felt warm and small and good against him. Then his wounded leg refused to support him any longer. They cut part of Tahiri's garment to make a tourniquet. The living fabric worked even better than anticipated, because after the shock of being severed, it contracted, perhaps dying. They found the controls just as the craft rocked to a tremendous blast. Boy, that didn't take long, Anakin said. I wonder why they didn't just open the hatch. I sealed it, Tahiri said. It won't listen to anyone outside. How do you know? I just do. The ship rocked again, and several of the patches emitted a dull phosphorescence, which probably indicated damage to something or other. The walls became transparent as another concussion set the ship quivering. Anakin could now see what was causing this. Another ship, also grounded, was firing on them with one of its plasma weapons. Okay, Tahiri murmured, her fingers caressing the various nerve nodes. Let's see what... Yow! The ship jumped off the ground like a fleek eel from a hot pan. Anakin gasped and then whooped, slapping Tahiri on the back. We'll do this yet, he shouted. Let's burn out of here. Which way? Anyway, just go! The Domutex suddenly blurred away beneath them. Not bad, Anakin said. Now, if you can figure out how the weapons work... Tahiri shrieked suddenly. What's wrong? Anakin asked. It's in my head. The ship's talking to me, and it's telling me to turn back. In another second, it would have had me. This isn't good, Anakin said, watching the ground rush up. By the time they found the hatch and crawled out, Anakin could hear the drone of another Yuuzhan Vong ship approaching. Tahiri, he said, run for it. I'll just slow you down with this leg. No, Tahiri said simply. Please, I came all this way to rescue you. It can't have been for nothing. Tahiri brushed his cheek with her hand. It wasn't for nothing, she said. I know we used to be in everything together. I know if this is the end... There's nobody I would rather be standing with. I know that we can still make them sorry they ever tried to mess with the two of us. She took his hand. Anakin gripped it back. Okay, he conceded. Together. It didn't take the ship long to find them. They hadn't made it more than a kilometer beyond the river. Tahiri touched Anakin in the Force, tentatively. And for the first time, he really felt what they had done to her. The pain and confusion, the sickening nightmare sense of unreality. He poured his sympathy and strength back into her, and the bond strengthened. And as she gripped his fingers tighter, as he finally surrendered the last of his barriers against her, against them, the Force blew through him like a hurricane. Tahiri laughed. It was not the child's laugh.
Together, you are stronger than the sum of your parts, Ikrit had said. Together.
They wrenched a 1,000-year-old Masasi tree out of the ground and launched it straight up. By the time it struck the Yuuzhan Vong ship, it was traveling as fast as a speeder. It smacked into the Dubin basal and splintered, twisting the ship half around. Another tree jerked out of the ground, and another. One of the trees rammed into the cannon structure, and flame burst out all along one side of the ship. The ship wobbled, and molten fire dripped from its ruined weapon. But it was still there, and there were plenty more. Still, Anakin gripped Tahiri's hand. Together, he said. Then the air above them shrieked and strode, and sharp lines of red light carved into the Yuuzhan Vong ship, which by then was a corpse hurtling to the ground. Anakin looked up, mouth open. Another ship was descending, a ship made of metal and ceramic, not living coral. It was Ramus Venn's battered transport, and it was the most beautiful thing Anakin had ever seen. It dropped on repulsor lifts, and the hatch swung open. Quarrel stuck his head out.
"What are you waiting for?"
the old man shouted.
"Come aboard!"
Talon Card followed the pinpoint on the scanner with a raptor gaze. "What do you see?" Cam Solasar asked. "Long-range sensors tell us some sort of transport just broke the atmosphere of Yavin 4," Card told him. "Only moments ago, I felt an incredible surge in the Force," Solasar said. "I'm sure Anakin was involved, and I think Tahiri as well." "Can you feel them now? Are they on that transport?" Card asked. After a brief pause, Cam Solasar said, "Yes, they are." Card turned to his crew. "This looks like what we've been waiting for, people. If there are any doubts about this course of action, I need to hear them now." Silence, as he swept his gaze around the bridge and the screens depicting the captains of his other ships.
"When have we ever not been with you, Captain?"
Shada asked from the idiot's array. A chorus of cheers punctuated Shada's remark. Card's chest tightened with pride. "All right, people," he said. "Let's go to work." A series of bleeps and whistles greeted Anakin as he came aboard the transport. "Hey, Fiver," he said. "I'm glad to see you, too." "Get back to work, you lazy little droid," Ven snapped over his shoulder from the pilot's seat. "So, Ven, what's the plan?" Anakin asked. "Fly real fast until we get away." "That's it? Hey, I'm improvising. You gonna complain about me saving your butt?" "No," Anakin said. "I was thinking about thanking you. Now I'm not so sure." Anakin looked at the starfield. He was weak, very weak, but he thought he felt something. "Give me long-range sensors," he said. "Sorry, no can do. We were working on those when the creepy twins back there told me they felt you needed help. We cut the repair short and hot-jetted it." "Sana, Valen," Anakin said, gesturing them forward. "Concentrate. Do you feel something out there?" "Sure. Cam Solasar is out there." Valen studied the space around him for a moment, then pointed at around 90 degrees. "There." "I suggest you set course where Valen tells you. Otherwise, we're going to end up as star food." "Well," Ben said, "the little creeps have been right so far today." Anakin started to take the co-pilot seat, but Ven placed his hand in it. "That's Coral's," he said.
"I'll give it up," Coral said. "Every solo I've ever known was a better pilot than me."
"Don't be silly," Anakin said. "Even if that were true, you're in better shape than I am." "Thank you both. You came through for Tahiri and me when you could have just run." "Are you kidding? And have the little creeps back there slag my brain?" Ven said.
"Anyway," Coral reminded them, "we're not out of this yet."
"True," Anakin said, "but we're a lot nearer than we were. Speaking of which, we're going to have words with some Vong in about half an hour," Ven said.
"They're catching up that fast?"
"No, these are already out here." "I'll take the turret gun," Anakin said.
"Right. Give them an argument at least," Ven said.
"The transport has been engaged by Vong, sir,"
Hasishi reported.
"They've taken a few hits, but they're still coming right for us."
"How soon?" Card asked.
"If we plot a straight course, less than 20 minutes. But if we do that, we'll be perfect targets for the blockade that's forming up down there."
"Yes, but if we go around, we'll never reach them before that destroyer analog. Duncan, plot it straight in and have the idiot's array, the demise, and the ether way escort us."
Anakin watched a coral skipper spin off to port. It was the destroyer analog coming in from above starboard that bothered him. That and the fact that they couldn't see much beyond it. For all they knew, there could be an entire Yuuzhan Vong fleet between him and Talon Card. If Card was there at all. Very soon, the destroyer was going to catch them. He hoped Ven had a few tricks up his sleeve.
Direct hit on the idiot's array, sir,
the Sishi reported. Shada, are you there? Card asked over the comm.
Still here, boss. They tickled us, but we can still keep up.
One more hit like that and you're ions, Card disagreed. Peel off, you've done enough.
Sorry, boss, can't hear you. Something wrong with my comm unit. Hang tight, we'll get you there.
He saw the idiot's array take her final hit, right through the engines. Plumes of plasma streamed from her. Get out of there, Shada! He shouted into the comm. No answer came.
The idiot's array is still keeping pace with that destroyer, sir,
the Sishi reported.
I don't understand it. Her engines are gone, and their reactor is building to critical.
She's got a tractor lock on them, Card said. She must have diverted all of her power. An instant later, the idiot's array vanished in a sphere of pure white light, taking most of the Yuuzhan Vong destroyer with it. Shada, Card murmured again, feeling very tired. He'd lost more friends than enemies through the years, but somehow, of all the people he knew, he'd imagined that Shada would outlive him. One destroyer down, he gritted, and one to go.
We've just lost the ether waste, sir,
Hisishi said. Destroyed?
No, her power grid is down.
Then it's just us.
Yes. Sir, behind us.
Card saw the ship appear on the screen, and from sheer conditioning, his heart jumped up into his throat. And a weird disjunction of realities tugged at his sanity. The ship that had appeared, almost on top of them, was an Imperial Star Destroyer. A red Imperial Star Destroyer. Message, sir, Duncan said. Put it on. A bearded human face appeared.
Well, Card,
he growled.
I suppose I'll be pulling you out of this mess as well. I hope you have something appropriate to compensate me with.
Booster Terek?
None other.
I'm sure I can dig something out of my warehouses.
Never mind that. Where's my grandson?
We think he's on the transport that big Yuuzhan Vong ship's about to swallow.
That's all I wanted to know. See you on the other side, Card.
The other side of what?
The nebula I'm about to make.
In the rear turret, Anakin kept the turbo laser pumping steadily, digging plumes of molten Yorick coral from the destroyer analog.
Heads up back there,
Ben's voice crackled.
They're launching coral skippers. You'll have to keep them off, Solo. If I try to outrun them, we'll be sitting pretty for the destroyer.
Understood, Anakin replied. They came, but he couldn't shoot them all. The transport bucked and complained as molten plasma did its damage. An enemy shot got through Anakin's barrage, glancing from the cockpit, leaving hairline fractures on the transparent field. One more hit and I'm breathing vacuum, Anakin thought. He took out two skiffs, but then three dropped into a wedge headed straight for him. He took a deep, calming breath and began firing, but he knew he wasn't going to get them all. He wondered what it was going to feel like when his blood started boiling. He felt them in the Force at the same time the coral skippers vanished in a searing white haze, and two X-Wings whipped around the expanding cloud of gas and molten coral. His comm crackled.
Need a hand, little brother?
Jaina!
This is some mess you've gotten us into, Anakin,
a masculine voice replied.
Jason, where... how...
Explanations later,
Jaina said.
Get out of there fast. We'll keep these pups off you. Corrin Horn's out here, too. I almost pity the Vong.
But if I clear...
Believe me,
Jaina said.
You'll want to be clear.
Anakin didn't see why until they were on the other side of the errant venture. By that time, the Yuuzhan Vong ship was blazing like a newborn star. Anakin stared through the transparasteel and grinned wide enough to swallow a crescent moon. Card wasn't grinning a standard day later when the remaining Yuuzhan Vong ships finally packed it in and jumped to hyperspace. He was watching the drifting ruins, grimly tallying his losses. Yes, he was getting too old for this nonsense.
Captain, message for you, sir,
the Sishi said. Put it on. A few seconds later, a lean, middle-aged face appeared. Corrin Horn, Card said. It's good to see you. I assume you were on your father-in-law's Star Destroyer?
When Jaina and Jason found us, yes. I was one of the X-Wings out there.
His face contorted briefly, then returned to a neutral expression.
Card, I want to thank you for saving my children. I know what it cost you.
No, you don't, Card thought. He didn't say it. You're welcome, he told Horn instead. When I make promises, I do my best to keep them.
We're alike in that,
Horn replied.
And I also pay my debts. I owe you a big one. This doesn't even come close to squaring us up. But I do have something for you.
What's that?
Someone, I should say.
Horn moved aside and was replaced by Shada Dukal's wry features. Shada!
Come on, Card,
Shada said.
You didn't think I was stupid enough to stay on a flaming ship, did you? Once I got the lock, we went for the escape pods. Horn ran across us in his X-Wing, doing a slow spiral toward the gas giant.
She squinted at the screen.
Hey, boss, what's wrong with your eye?
The air unit has been blowing dust in from somewhere, Card said, blinking away the suspicious moisture. Get your tail back over here so we can discuss how long it will take you to pay me back for the idiot's array. Shada rolled her eyes.
See you soon, boss.
Then, despite his losses, Talon Card did allow himself a small, quiet smile. Why not? They'd won.
We never thought we'd find Booster, Jaina confessed, around a mouthful of food. When he doesn't want to be found, he can really disappear.
What was he doing? Anakin asked.
Running weapons to the hot underground, actually, Jaina replied. I just asked myself where Booster would go if he wanted to help the war effort and still turn a profit without feeling bad about it.
You're kidding.
It didn't hurt that Corrin was with him, Jason said. We got hints of him in the Force.
Jason's being modest, Jaina said. He spent a lot of time in deep meditation trying to find Corrin. It was no accident.
That's pretty impressive, Anakin allowed.
Thank you, Anakin, Jason said, as if surprised. His brow wrinkled in such a way that it made him look briefly very much like their father.
Are you okay, Anakin?
Anakin nodded.
Yes, actually. In fact, better than okay.
What do you mean? Jason asked, a little suspiciously.
Anakin chewed thoughtfully for a moment.
Up until now, he said, I had no way to think of the Yuuzhan Vong except as enemies.
They are enemies, Jaina said.
Yes, Anakin replied. So was the Empire. But Palpatine aside, it must have been possible for Mom and Dad and Uncle Luke to at least conceive of the people they were fighting as possible friends. In fact, that's how Uncle Luke destroyed the Emperor, right? He was able to imagine Darth Vader as his father, as a friend. The Yuuzhan Vong, well, to be frank, I didn't even want to conceive of them that way. But I have a deeper understanding than I did.
I can think of them as people now, and that makes a difference.
Jason nodded. Does that mean you've decided not to fight them anymore? Anakin blinked.
Are you kidding? We have to fight them, Jason. I have to fight them. I just know more about how to do it now.
Jason's frown was fully developed. Are you sure that's the right lesson to take away from all this? He asked.
No offense, Jason, but I think I'll leave off worrying about what lesson I might have learned if I'd been someone else. Because frankly, if I'd been someone else, I don't think I would have survived to learn any lesson.
Tell Booster we're going to have to evacuate the ship, Jaina said. The way Anakin's head is expanding, it'll split through the hull in no time.
Believe it or not, Anakin replied, I don't say what I just said with pride. I'm just stating a fact.
Don't forget who pulled your butt out of the fire there at the end, Jaina replied.
Anakin let a grin creep across his face.
But that's what I meant, don't you see? When I said that no one but me could have survived what I did. Because no one else in the galaxy has you two for his brother and sister.
He picked up his tray, trying not to laugh at their gaping mouths.
Now, if you'll excuse me, he said, I have someone I need to go see.
Anakin found Tahiri's stateroom door open a crack. Through it, he saw her lying on her bed, bare feet propped up on the wall. Anakin rapped the door.
Hi, he said. Hi, come in if you want.
He took a seat on the edge of the bed. You didn't show up for dinner. I thought I would bring you some. He placed a food container on the bed.
Thanks, Tahiri said.
She turned her head and for the first time met his gaze.
What happened to it? She asked.
The Shaper base.
Well, Booster pretty much slagged it. Card and his people evacuated the slaves. We're going to drop them off someplace. Of course, the Yuuzhan Vong can come back, I guess, since we left the system pretty much without defenses, but there's nothing we can do about that.
No, Tahiri said. There isn't. I guess that's the end of the Academy.
Of course it isn't. The Academy was never a place. It's an idea. We're just taking it on jets. Booster's going to let the Academy kids stay on the errant venture. He'll make random jumps around the galaxy until it's safe to settle the kids down someplace.
Safe? Tahiri hissed. How can it ever be safe? How can anything ever be...
Her words seemed to clot in her throat, and she turned back to the view of space.
Tahiri, I know how you feel, Anakin said.
She closed her eyes, and two small tears squeezed from the corners.
If anyone does, I guess you do, she said after a moment.
They watched the stars in silence for a while.
Where will you go now?
Tahiri asked when the silence was too thin.
Back out to fight the Yuuzhan Vong?
Eventually.
I want to go with you.
That's why I said eventually. I'm staying on here for a while, until you've healed. Until I've healed. Then, if you still want to go, we go. Together.
Adept Nen Yim, step forth.
Nen Yim bowed and then stood before the War Master, Sabong La.
Master Yalfoth claims that your master conspired in heresy, and that any results you obtained were stained by ungodliness.
Master Yalfoth is a respected shaper. So was Meishan Quad. She was never able to answer these charges, and I may not speak for her. But I tell you this, War Master. What we learned from the Jedi was valuable. It has worth to the Yuuzhan Vong. The records in the Damutek were destroyed, and my master is dead. Only I remain to remember.
This was badly bungled by shapers and warriors alike. If Tsakvota were not dead, I would kill him myself. And I should have you sacrificed.
If death is my lot, War Master, I embrace it. But I repeat, what we learned of the Jedi here ought not to perish with me.
Give me at least a chance to record what I know in a worldship casa.
The War Master's cruel eyes did not waver.
You will have that chance. Do not squander it, as your master did. And if more Jedi are captured, will our work shaping them resume?
Your domain has failed.
They will not be given a second chance with the Jedi. Domain Fath will continue the work on the Jedi problem.
Then it will never be solved, Nen Yim thought to herself.
Back to masters so mired in the old ways, they would rather let the Yuuzhan Vong perish than contemplate change. So be it. But in her heart, Nen Yim still considered Meizhan Quad her master. Nen Yim would continue the work they had begun, somehow. It was too important. And if Nen Yim must die for this, she must. The glorious heresy would live on.
I submit to your will, War Master.
Nen Yim lied.
One other thing before you go,
Sabong La said.
You hid shamefully among the shamed ones before the reoccupation force arrived. Have you heard of a new heresy amongst the shamed ones concerning the Jedi?
I have, War Master.
Explain it to me. There is a certain admiration for them, War Master. Many feel that Vua Rapung was redeemed from shamed status by the Jedi Solo. Many feel their own redemption lies not in prayer to Yun Shuno, but in the Jedi.
This heresy will die on this moon, said the War Master.
If every shamed one here must perish in glorious sacrifice, it will end here.
Nen Yim nodded affirmation, but in her bones she knew the truth. Repression was the favored food of heresy.
This is Alexander Adams. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 1, Conquest, by Greg Keyes. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Charles Potter. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Abridgment by David Smith. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 1, Conquest, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 2001. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2001, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audiobooks presentation. All rights reserved.